IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. George W. Bush's public support dropped sharply over the past month, especially among older voters, political independents, and people in the Midwest, an Associated Press poll found. And for the first time, more voters in this poll's 2 years of tracking the question said they would definitely vote against Bush than they would definitely vote for him. Bush's approval rating stood at 47% in the AP Ipsos poll taken early in February, down from 56% approval just a month ago. Half, or 50%, said they disapproved in the latest poll. Bush's 47% rating is the same as his father's at this stage in his presidency 12 years ago, before he lost to Bill Clinton. Democratic presidential frontrunner John Kerry is poised to secure the backing of former rival Dick Gephardt and his once loyal labor unions, further clearing the Massachusetts senator's path towards the nomination. His opponents, meanwhile, are seeking to slow his rapid rise and establish themselves as his alternative. Howard Dean is camping out in Wisconsin with hopes of resurrecting his struggling campaign, and Sons of the South John Edwards and Wesley Clark are stumping in that region as well. The upcoming campaign calendar likely will heap even more momentum and more delegates onto Kerry as well. His rivals haven't made much of an effort in Michigan, Washington, or Maine, where contests this weekend offered 228 delegates combined. The U.S. economy created just 112,000 new jobs in January, far fewer than expected, government data showed on Friday, in a disappointing report that will likely weigh on George W. Bush's election campaign. The fifth straight monthly gain in payrolls outside farming followed a revised increase of 16,000 new jobs in December, the Labor Department said. The unemployment rate ticked down to 5.6%, the lowest rate since January 2002, from 5.7% the previous month, but those numbers are taken from a separate, smaller survey. Analysts had been expecting the improving economy to create 150,000 new jobs in January. They were looking for the unemployment rate to hold steady at 5.7%. More news after this.
In an instant, my son could make anyone smile. In an instant, he was gone. The driver was looking for other cars. But he didn't watch out for my son. Crossing the street. Imagine, in the time it takes to stop for someone in the crosswalk, you could save a life. Or change yours forever.
A message from the Federal Highway Administration.
An Idaho truck driver received his Million Mile Safe Driving Award in a hospital after getting injured in a crash. Raymond Mattis was headed from Washington State to Ohio and planned to stop in Missoula, Montana on Saturday to pick up his award from Jim Palmer Trucking. Before he could reach the company's yard, an SUV skidded into the path of his tractor-trailer on Interstate 90 outside of town. For IE America Radio Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, in just a mouse-click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse-click away.
Anyone who still thinks that there's not a dime's worth of difference between the two parties should take a look at a Washington squabble over the dime itself. A gaggle of top Republican leaders in Congress, including the odious legislative thug Tom DeLay, are furiously pushing a bill to alter the dime. They want to remove the likeness of Franklin D. Roosevelt from the coin and replace it with the countenance of Ronald Reagan. In a time when America's health care system is failing, when the federal budget is $500 billion short, when middle-class jobs are disappearing, when our troops are dying every day in Iraq and Afghanistan, isn't it comforting to see that our country's lawmakers do not let these actual problems deter them from getting down in the slime of petty partisanship for something as inconsequential as displacing a Democratic president with a Republican one on our 10-cent piece? Democrats in Congress are responding with their own effort to keep FDR on the coin. They point out that his face was put on it not merely because he was president, but especially because he had founded the March of Dimes organization, through which America's children collected the dimes that funded research into polio, the awful disease that had put Roosevelt himself in a wheelchair. Thanks to those dimes, a vaccine was developed that effectively ended polio in our country. But Democrats are not alone in opposing this effort to scrape FDR off the dime. None other than Nancy Reagan opposes it. Indeed, Ronald Reagan himself has proudly noted that he voted for Roosevelt in all four of his presidential elections, and Reagan cited the Democrat as the greatest president of the century. This is Jim Hightower saying, nonetheless, the rabidly partisan Republican leaders are still demanding FDR's head. If they win, will they then go after the nickel, which features Jefferson, the first Democrat? To help stop this silliness on the dime, call the office of Representative Jim McGovern, 202-225-6101.
What do you think I like about communing with nature as much as I do, being on the tractor as much time as I do, or spending time with the animals?
Spitting diesel into the ozone layer? Yeah, you're at one with nature.
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature, and you will atone.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Hey, Truth Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Looks like we're having some technical difficulties all of a sudden. So until we get it repaired, we're going to play a rebroadcast of one of my better programs. So stick around, stay with me. We'll have this fixed momentarily.
Right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
Welcome back, 7 past the hour. We're at 800 Talk, yes. We have, I've said this a couple of times. We have a lot of ground to cover here. Senator, more comments from Senator Byrd. And then we have a series of comments from Dennis Kucinich that I want to get to in a second. But let's just move on to some phone calls here. Elizabeth is calling from Norwalk, Ohio. Elizabeth, about time you called in.
I know, Mike, and I get so nervous. My middle name, rather. But yesterday was my big 7-0. So after I listened to the first part of your messages, I called Senator DeWine's office, Senator Voinovich's office, the White House.
Uh-huh.
Byrd, first I started with him. That's my birthday present to me. Gephardt's office is not answering. It just rings and rings and rings. So
really?
I'm trying to get the message out to stop the insanity. But I have an article here from a weekly Irish American newspaper, and it's the Irish Echo. And this is written by Patrick Farrelly. And his article talks about Bernadette Devlin McCloskey,
mm-hmm.
how she compared New York City, the coming to JFK Airport and flying into Belfast Airport, and the fact that up at JFK there is a framed copy of the Bill of Rights, and in Belfast was a copy of the Prevention of Terrorism Act.
Mm.
And she said, it's unbelievable that regardless of its shortcomings, at Kennedy, you knew you were in a country that had a constitution and a Bill of Rights, a guaranteed individual rights that were inalienable.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's still there, but with what's going on, they should put suspended or deleted over that sign at Kennedy.
And Bernadette Devlin should know, having been a spokeswoman years ago, back in the 60s for the IRA.
Right. And this article compares these years of what was going on over there, mm-hmm. in Northern Ireland, with what's going on now. And they said that, and this Patrick Farrelly said, and he evidently lives in New York, because he said, the next time you have a Pakistani cab driver in New York, ask him how many of his coworkers have disappeared in the last year. That's one point. There's other points, but the last thing I want to get to, In the British case, it took 20 years and thousands of deaths and injuries for them to realize that political situations demand political solutions.
Mm-hmm.
The British seemed to have little realization that their policies towards the Irish were producing a murderous rage in even the most law-abiding people. And the comparison, the fact that it was a wasted effort over there, didn't achieve anything. And what's going to happen here? This is what's going on in Washington, I think, is under the category of insanity.
I certainly don't disagree with you, Elizabeth. I'm stunned every single day. I get tongue-tied here. I can't talk. I'm stunned every day to realize what has happened in this republic, what has happened to the Constitution, and it just continues. I'm glad you called in. I hope you don't be a stranger so much. Call in.
Well, we've been busy, you know, with hospital and all, but anyway, keep up the good work, Mike, and keep us courageous, too, because it's so difficult working or living in this wilderness of conservatism.
Up there in north central Ohio.
Right.
All right. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Stay well.
All right. You too. I appreciate your call. Appreciate your call very much. Robert Byrd again on the Donahue interview last night on his fears. They're not fears, Senator. It's reality. But his fears about the fact that Bush is making the war a campaign issue.
What I'm afraid of is that we're going to be rushed into making a decision here, which would be tainted by the supercharged atmosphere of politics. That is wrong. We're going to have to answer for this vote in the years to come. And I want to be able to look into that mirror when I leave this Senate and believe that I voted first, last, and always for the Constitution, the institution of the Senate, and the American people. What's in their best interest?
Well, Senator, that just sounds so anachronistic now, because so many of your colleagues are not voting in the interest of the American people and the Constitution of the United States. They are doing, in fact, what you are afraid of, what we all have been afraid of for the past several months. Forget the Republican Party. The American Fascist Party is committed to the Bush crime family. But the Democratic leadership, oh, never mind. Now, Byrd again on Donahue last night. On the cost of the war, there is a cost to war, not just in blood, not just in arms being blown off and legs being shattered and guts being spilled someplace and heads being blown to pieces and women and children and men being blown into chunks up against a wall someplace. There is also a monetary cost. Are you ready to pay it?
Mr. Lawrence Lindsay said a few days ago, in answer to a question, as reported in the newspapers, that this war would probably cost somewhere between 100 billion and 200 billion. Somewhere between 100 and 200 billion. But he said, that's nothing. That's nothing. Now, I can't comprehend this kind of mentality. The President of the United States has dug in his heels against $9 billion being spent in the appropriation bills for Homeland Security and for veterans and for the good of the people, the safety of the people of this country. He has stuck his feet in concrete and will not move. He says to the people out there, when he has all these backdrops of Marines, and I'd like to have those backdrops too, but he says that Congress ought to pass my bill on Homeland Security. He was offered a chance to put his signature on an appropriation bill that would have provided $2.5 billion for Homeland Security. He turned his back on it.
Yes, Senator, that's because Homeland Security is a joke. That's what you have been fighting against. That's why you have been pouring your blood, sweat, and tears into the rhetoric in the sentence. And God bless you for it, Senator. But George W. Bush is a liar. He is a murderous liar. So when you go on Donahue and talk about this stuff, yes, we understand, Senator Byrd, and God bless you for bringing it out on a television program. But it's not presented as news, is it, Senator Byrd? You have to go there. You have to sit down with Phil Donahue and talk truth to the American people. Where in the hell are we? Byrd goes on to say that the American people need to respond. But how many of us don't comprehend what this means? Got an email from who here? Gloria. Mike, please announce that Senator Byrd is imploring imploring the American people to voice their opinions on Iraq ahead of the vote in the Senate. On Monday, the House protesters, the people in the House who are against this, are going to give the count on those who called. Members of the United States House of Representatives that are against this insanity. We'll let the public know how many people called against this. For God's sake, pick up the phone and call. It's a Capitol switchboard. It's an 800 number. Please write this down. You can just ask for the congressperson's office, and they will connect you. This is for the House. This is for the U.S. House of Representatives. It's an 800 number. 648-3516. 648-3516. 648-3516. It's an 800 number. Just call it. Tell them no. No. Bird says the American people need to respond. What Bird is saying is the American people have not responded. Call the Capitol switchboard. 800-648-3516. Just call it. And say no. Laurie is calling from Roanoke, Virginia. Laurie, welcome to the program. This is your first time checking in, right?
Yes, it is, Mike.
Well, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I just wanted to let you know that I have been calling the Capitol Hill all day long.
Bless your heart.
And Senator Byrd's mailbox is full.
Mm-hmm.
But you can still get through, and they will still take messages. I have called Senator Kennedy and asked him to pick up where Senator Byrd leaves off if he cannot continue the filibuster.
Mm-hmm.
I have called Senator Kerry and asked him to back them. I have called Senator Clinton. I called Lieberman and told him what a traitor he was. I called Geppert and told him what a traitor he was.
Oh, my God. You've been busy.
I've been really busy.
Bless your heart.
I've been on the phone all day long.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to let you know that it is working. People are getting out there and calling because apparently Kennedy's office is being flooded. Kerry's office is being flooded, and so is Senator Byrd's office.
Just a guess here, Lori. Do you think this will make a difference?
Honestly, I don't know, Mike. I'm getting really frustrated. I belong to a group online. We're called the Patriots of Truth, and we are just so frustrated because we're trying so hard to get people involved, and we've got over 160 members and maybe a handful of our members even write back to us and give us information. So even within our own group, we're getting kind of discouraged because we're not getting enough feedback.
Yeah.
So it's. I hope it makes a difference.
I hope it does, too. Lori, I really respect you for what you're doing. Thanks for calling the program today. I hope you call again.
I listen to you all the time. You're great.
Bless your heart.
Thank you.
Take care. I got an email from Kelly. She writes, I don't know how else to explain this other than to tell the story from the start. I went to a Democratic Party meet and greet that was held in a restaurant meeting room. They had appetizers and about three or four people spoke. They talked mostly about how they were trying to get more people involved. They needed volunteers to help with the campaigning and so forth. It was a good meeting, and they had a lot of good ideas. And not long after the speakers were done, the restaurant staff said we had to leave because of another meeting coming in. There were still a lot of people there, and someone suggested if they were going to throw us out, we could go to her house. Anyway, long story short, I jumped at the chance. By the way, this is a very Republican area, so being with a lot of Democrats is kind of new. So we went to the woman's house, and there's a lot of talking about politics, movies, and, of course, Iraq, and a little bush bashing. And then when it cleared out a little, people started talking serious politics, strategy, the Democrats, the elections. I don't remember when, but sometime about the point it got down to 7 to 10 people, the woman who lived there turned the sound off on the TV, and then it got down to the real nuts and bolts. People were talking about what we needed to do, how to get people involved, campaign strategies, etc. It was a very contagious discussion. And then someone said we should be using the economy more, and the candidates should use that in their ads, and asked if anyone would volunteer to do research and find things out about the economy. I piped right up and asked what kind of stuff they were wanting. The man who asked the question said anything on the economy, and especially any, in his words, Enron-type stuff. I rattled off the 36% drop in stocks, $5 trillion loss since Bush took office, unemployment almost doubled, surplus to deficit stats, 2 million out of work, etc., etc. You know the rest. Well, they all stopped and just stared at me. Now stick around, and I'll tell you what Kelly discovered then.
I'm driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and four pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped five sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
Hey, what is it?
I realize I love you, but as long as you're with Jessica, there can never be anything between us.
Cass, there's no need to cry. Besides, I've got really great news.
You're leaving Jessica?
No. I just saved a load of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico. I saved. I thought that meant something to you.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
The Mike Mullen Show.
Now in Sacramento, there's Conan the Groper promising he's changed.
Cats behave badly sometimes. Yes, it is true that I was on rowdy movie sets. And I have done things that were not right, which I thought then was playful. But now I recognize that I have offended people.
I thought I was being playful. Just because I grabbed their breast, I thought I was playful. Kathy's laughing at my Schwarzenegger. I'm sorry, I can't do it. All right, you do it.
I've groped and molested women in the past, but if you elect me, I promise I'll never do it again, because you know powerful politicians never abuse their power for sex.
Okay.
And that's how it's done.
Okay.
Hello, cutie pie. Your clothes, give them to me. Now. Come on.
The Mike Mullen Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
Hey, Truth Seekers, Mike Mullen here. Looks like we're having some technical difficulties all of a sudden. So until we get it repaired, we're going to play a rebroadcast of one of my better programs. So stick around. Stay with me. We'll
excuse me. If you're listening to the program on the Internet right now, will you email me, please? We're getting reports that what is going over the air is the Internet is a program that we did before the Gulf War, for God's sake. I have no idea, but we've gotten a couple of phone calls.
Apparently, it's a show where you're talking about Phil Donahue and Robert Byrd from before the Iraqi invasion.
Phil Donahue and Robert Byrd.
Yeah, when Phil Donahue was still on the air.
That's 2 years ago.
Well, no, it's about a year ago.
All right, I'm looking for some emails here, because if I don't get any, I mean, what's the point of being here? If something else is being broadcast, this is going nowhere.
Well, come on now. We do have some radio stations, and we are on Sirius.
Okay. Well, that's what my producer says. I guess I have to do what she says. But if you are listening via the Internet, please send me an email. Let me know. Right now, I got one here that says, yes, it's a pre-war program. Well, how do you know if you're listening? Oh, we are live now? Okay. All right, how much did people not hear?
Start over.
I guess I should start the whole damn program over, huh?
Just this part.
Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on Resistance Radio. Thank you for joining us this Friday night. Joining us in our second hour will be a professor from Columbia College in Chicago, Louis Silverstein, to discuss his book, Deep Spirit and Great Heart, Living in Marijuana Consciousness. That's probably where we are now. And thanks to the suggestion of our Broken Arrow, Oklahoma bureau chief, Nelson, we're going to have some audio of Bill Clinton at the 2000 Democratic National Convention prior to the theft of the presidency in the United States. And you'll hear some stuff said that will either make you very sad or very angry or both.
And
if anyone listening tonight has a timeshare in Key West they'd like to rent us in March, or if you have an inn with a travel agent, please call Kathy now, since we only have 15 broadcast days left, and I have an almost psychopathic pregnant wife. And it would be nice to get out of here, but because we are liberal radio broadcasters, we don't have a lot of money, but we'll be more than happy to pay whatever it is. So if you know somebody who knows somebody, call Kathy. So all of that stuff I did the first half hour is just down the toilet. Right?
Not to serious listeners.
Well, no, not...
And not to the affiliates that we have.
That's true.
That carry the first hour of the program.
All 16 of them, the listeners. All right. Well, you know, it's been the history of this program, right? All right. Well, what did we? Well, I guess we didn't have a lot, did we? The American Gulf War Veterans Association says, yeah, Bush is guilty of military crimes. We're talking about Tim Russert's little thingy on Sunday with George Bush. Media whore number one, Tim Russert, who is going to tape an interview with Bush tomorrow for broadcast on NBC's Meet the Press on Sunday. Keeping in mind, of course, that NBC is owned by General Electric, which is probably the numero uno weapons manufacturer on the face of the planet. General Electric owns NBC. NBC owns their little whore, Tim Russert, and Tim Russert is going to be doing, possibly for George Bush, what Monica did for Bill Clinton on national television on Sunday. If it doesn't work out that way, if Tim asks some valid questions, we'll come on the air Monday and go, oh, my God. Okay, we're live now? It's all real now? Oh, good. Just in time for a break.
Didn't think you could still get Union Made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here now and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show, 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time, Monday through Friday on IE America Radio Network.
of statistics, the human impact on the natural environment is enormous and abnormal. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. When it comes to consumption of the Earth's natural resources, the impact of humanity is far outside the range of what's normal for populations of many other warm-blooded creatures. That's one finding in a study by Chuck Fowler, an ecologist with the National Marine Mammal Laboratory in Seattle, Washington. Fowler normally studies the way entire populations of marine mammals affect their surroundings. He expanded his research to see how people compare with other species in terms of the ecological footprint we leave on the natural world.
There are lots of ways of measuring those footprints, and they range all the way from our consumption of food resources, our production of carbon dioxide, our occupation of space. You name it, there are just lots of ways of measuring the footprint, and what we are doing now is using the footprints that all species have and making comparisons between humans and other species in a way where we're getting an assessment of what works.
In part of his study, Fowler compared the size of the human population to numbers for 63 other mammals that are roughly our size and weight. The list included animals such as seals and white-tailed deer. The statistical comparison produced a range of population sizes that would be considered normal for each species. The upper limit of normal population sizes were in the tens of millions, but no higher. Fowler says a world filled with a billion white-tailed deer would be quite abnormal. In the context of this study, he says abnormal clearly applies to the human population, which now stands at 6 billion people. Fowler's research was recently published in a journal of the Royal Society of London. The article carries the title, Is Humanity Sustainable? Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, taking your calls, talking to celebrities like Raven Simone from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have two chinchillas and I have a big Briar.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out. So he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Charisse Dolittle, who talks to the animals, and you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All the is love.
Animal Talk on the IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Got the flying monkey right blues. Here's the cure. Mike Malloy.
Okay, thanks everybody who emailed in. My God, we got about 70 emails there in about 2 minutes. Apparently, for the first 26 minutes of the program tonight, y'all were being beaten and flayed by some program that had to do with Robert Byrd and something about Donahue. Oh my God, that goes back like I don't know what, before World War II. hopefully it's straightened out. Which, by the way, leads me to say this. I think it's time I say this since we only have a couple of weeks left on this network. I really do appreciate how so many people have hung with us through all these technical glitches that we have had. In the 3 years I've been with this network, I really appreciate it. Y'all. The loyalty y'all have shown has just been astonishing. When you have the kind of technical screw-ups that we've experienced over a three-year period, you know, some people will just leave a program, say, to hell, I don't want to hear it. You know, I'm tired of it. I know I'm kind of that way, too, I guess. If folks can't get it right, there's too many other choices available, and you just kind of split. And what has really impressed me, and Kathy also, is the fact that through a lot of this technical stuff, y'all have hung with us. You send in the emails, you make the phone calls. A couple of people emailed in and said, oh my God, I think World War III has started and they have taken you off the air. No. But thank you all so much. We, like I said, we have 15 shows left after tonight, 15 broadcast programs after tonight. And then that's it. And I don't know what happens next. But the loyalty you all have shown to this program in the 3 years plus that we've been on the air here has just been astonishing. And I thank you for it very, very, very much. Now, what I said early, it was just a bunch of garbage in the first half hour. You didn't miss anything. But we are going to have, thanks to our Broken Arrow, Oklahoma Bureau Chief, that would be Nelson, some sound from the 2000 Democratic National Convention. This is before the Bush crime family stole the office of the presidency from Al Gore. And just some comments from Bill Clinton. Now, for you people who don't like Bill Clinton, then turn off your, you know, turn off the program. I don't care. Don't email me and say, no, not Bill Clinton. I happen to think he was the greatest Republican president this country's ever had. And he said some damn good things at this DNC convention on August 15th, 2000. And if you want to hear it, stick around. If you don't want to hear it, don't stick around. But what we've got for you is the reason Kathy wants you to hear this, like I said, Nelson sent it in, but the reason we want you to hear it is because Clinton sounds almost psychic when he predicts what could happen if the Republicans took over in the election of 2000. It's spooky. What Clinton has said. So if you don't like Bill Clinton, we're going to do this in about an hour. If you don't like Bill Clinton, leave. Okay? Just check out. Go listen to something else. I don't give a damn. You know? I did. I got a couple emails you're getting. Oh, not Bill Clinton. God. All right. Media whore number one, Tim Russert. Is going to do a little taped interview. He's walking into the snake pit tomorrow. I guess going to be down at the White House. And he's going to interview Bush for an hour, and then they're going to broadcast it on NBC, which, like I said, is owned by General Electric, which, as you know, is one of the largest weapons manufacturers, nuclear armaments pigs on the face of the earth. General Electric owns NBC. NBC owns media whore number one, Tim Russert. Well, anyway, David Korn has some, he says he's got a few questions here that he thinks Tim Russert ought to ask George Bush. You know, there's before I get to the questions, there's a lot of things to ask Bush. You know, did he decide to use military force against Iraq before 9/11? Where are the weapons he insisted were there? Why is he using phony budget numbers? Did he engage in less than proper business dealings before he entered politics? Why has he misled the public while promoting his policies on stem cell research, global warming, missile defense? Why has he opposed certain homeland security measures and not adequately funded others? It's a long list. And as David Korn says, I'm sure Russert is busy preparing his own questions. But he's got a couple here for Russert. Here's one. In October 2002, during a speech in Cincinnati, you said, Mr. Bush, that Saddam Hussein had a massive stockpile of biological weapons. But the National Intelligence Estimate on Iraq did not report there was any massive stockpile of bioweapons in Iraq. And this past Thursday, CIA Director George Tenet said, quote, we said we had no specific information on the types or quantities of biological weapons, agents, or stockpiles at Baghdad's disposal, unquote. So, Mr. Bush, if the CIA did not say there was a massive stockpile of biological weapons in Iraq, what was your basis for asserting that a massive stockpile did exist? Did you know something the CIA did not? Did you overstate the intelligence? Now, do you think Russert will ask a question like that? Here's another one. In December 2002, you said, quote, we do not know whether or not Hussein has a nuclear weapon, end quote. A remark, Mr. President, suggesting that Hussein might have had one. But the National Intelligence Estimate said that he did not have a nuclear weapon and that it would take Iraq 5 to 7 years to produce one. And then only if its nuclear weapons program was left unchecked. Mr. President, this past week, George Tenet said, quote, we said Saddam Hussein did not have a nuclear weapon, end quote. Was it then not misleading, Mr. Bush, to tell the public that, quote, we don't know whether Iraq had a nuclear weapon, when in fact we did know? Eh?
Before the war, Mr. President, you said Hussein was dealing with Al-Qaeda. On May 1st, you called Hussein an ally of Al-Qaeda. At a press conference in July 2003, you were asked to provide evidence to back up your claims that Hussein had been working with Al-Qaeda, and you replied, Mr. President, quote, "Yes, I think, first of all, remember I just said we've been there for 90 days since the cessation of major military operations. Now I know in our world where news comes and goes, and there's this kind of instant news, and you must have done this, you must do that yesterday, and there's a level of frustration by some in the media. I'm not suggesting you're frustrated. You don't look frustrated to me at all, but it's going to take time for us to gather the evidence and analyze the mounds of evidence, literally the miles of documents that we have uncovered," end quote. That is, Mr. Bush, you said that investigators were still looking for evidence, but the question was, what evidence did you have at the time that you made those pre-war claims that Al-Qaeda and Hussein were in cahoots? You did not answer that question. Can you tell us today what evidence you had for saying that Hussein was an ally of Al-Qaeda? You suppose Tim Russert's going to ask that question? Yeah, right. Here's another one. In July 2001, Mr. Bush, U.S. intelligence produced a warning that read, quote, "Based on a review of all source reporting over the last 5 months, we believe that Osama bin Laden will launch a significant terrorist attack against the U.S. and or Israeli interests in the coming weeks. The attack will be spectacular and designed to inflict mass casualties against U.S. facilities or interests. Attack preparations have been made. Attack will occur with little or no warning." End quote. From U.S. intelligence. Mr. Bush, this was less than 2 months before the horrific 9-1-1 attacks. According to the final report of the joint inquiry on 9-1-1 conducted by the House and Senate Intelligence Committees, this warning was prepared for, quote, "senior government officials," end quote. Now, the committees did not publicly say who received the report. And they said this was because the CIA would not permit them to tell the public which, quote, "senior government officials," end quote, were warned. The committees were angry about being gagged this way. But committee sources did tell reporters that this report was sent to the White House. So, Mr. Bush, why wouldn't your administration tell the public who saw this warning? Did you or any of your national security team see this report? If so, what did you or they do in response? And if this report did not make it to you or your senior aides, wouldn't you consider that a terrible mistake and want to find out who was responsible for that, Mr. Bush? And there's more. It's a shame that David Korn is not going to be handling the questions. Or one of our news guys from Take Back the Media. Or Peter Werby. Or Will Rivers Pitt. Or Greg Palast. Yeah, right. All right, what else we got here? Well, let's do this. Terry is calling from Petaluma, California. Hey, Terry.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
You know, it's kind of interesting because about 2 weeks ago, I guess it was, I watched Russert interview and John Kerry on his show, and he asked him point blank. He says, "What is this about the skull and bones? What's your involvement?" And Kerry looked at him and said, "I don't discuss secret societies."
Yeah.
And I started looking into this. And, Mike, have you ever looked into much about the Skull Bones group?
No. I don't know how serious that is. I know.
Let me tell you something. It's real serious.
Okay, but wait. I don't want to get all into it tonight on the program. I really don't. People can go to all kinds of websites and check it out. But, you know, it's the same thing as talking about the Masons, you know.
Not really.
Well, okay. I know there's all kinds of secret societies. To me, they're a bunch of half-assed frat boys to get together and maybe join in joint masturbation or something.
Not really. really.
In this house on the Yale campus. And
it's bigger than that.
Okay, it may be, but
I took over Yale.
Well, tell that to William Sloan Coffin, who in the 60s was an anti-war president of Yale. I don't think he was part of that.
Well,
we did this story earlier this week anyway about Kerry's wife and Bush, and you know, I mean, we've been through this. I realize this is a big issue to some people. I'm not trying to denigrate it. I'm not trying to say there's nothing there.
Just go to Google and in quotes put in.
Oh, I know. I've done it. I've read the stuff on Skull and Bones. I know. They can trace it all the way back to a German fraternity in the 18th or 17th century. And
George Washington knew about them.
George Washington knew about them. It's like the Illuminati. It's like the Masons. It's like, to me, I'm not denying it exists. Hell yes, it exists.
The only thing that keeps running in my head is that Led Zeppelin song that said, help say hello to the new boss, same as the old boss.
I'm hip. I understand. But to me, what joins George Bush and John Kerry at the hip is not Skull and Bones, is not Yale, is not their privileged upbringing. What joins them, those two at the hip, to me, is their approach to U.S. politics. You know, they're both for maintaining an occupying force in Iraq. They're both in favor of the death penalty. They're both in favor of locking people up for smoking dope. They're both this, or both this, or both this, and it just goes on and on and on and on.
And you know who the two biggest categories of Kerry supporters are? The biggest ones are, first of all, the lawyers, and the second ones are the Wall Street group.
Well, I have no problem with the lawyers. I've got lawyers in the family. I mean, I don't have any problem. If somebody ever puts my ass in jail, I'm not going to call for a plumber. You understand what I'm saying? I don't have any problem with lawyers. I think they're sleazy lawyers. My God, they're sleazy talk show hosts, too. The worst clutch of individuals in America are radio talk show hosts, not lawyers.
There's something like 86% of the Republican Party members are lawyers.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
And the rest of them are talk show hosts. Hey, Terry, I'm not trying to be a smartass here. I'm not trying to be snotty or anything. It's just that whole Skull and Bones thing. I frankly, and no offense. I just frankly don't care. If there's something, if it turns out to be this massive five-century-old plot, well, then, woo-hoo, surprise on me.
Well, if we get down to the Democratic convention floor and all of a sudden it looks like the they're looking at a vote between Kerry and Edwards, and then they maybe come up with who's going to break the tie between them, and it looks like the California vote.
Mm-hmm.
And if Kucinich has got control of the California vote, which he very could,
mm-hmm,
maybe he'll have the swing to be the kingmaker.
That could be, and I'm sure it would go to Edwards.
You bet. It'd be nice to see the two of them, because, you know, we're going for two guys now. It's actually, you know, the president and vice president are coming out of this convention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Hey, thanks, Terry.
Thank you.
All right, sir. I appreciate your call. No, I don't mean to pee on anybody's parade about Skull and Bones. I mean, what the hell? I have astrologers on this program every once in a while. So, whatever rings your chime, whatever floats your boat. It's just that, you know, that whole, you know, Mike, look at the back of a dollar bill. Oh, Jesus, it's full of Masonic symbols. Okay. Mike, did you know that of the 37 signers, how many were there? Of the Declaration of Independence, 34 of them were Masons. Okay. I don't care. I don't give a damn. Good for them. If that's the case, they did a hell of a thing. They did a good thing. I don't care. Mike, the Illuminati. Oh! Yeah, I just don't care. Now, that may be an indication of my thick-headedness and ignorance. If so, okay. You know, just like I don't believe the religious garbage, I don't believe this Illuminati garbage, I don't believe, none of this stuff. I'm sorry. I'm not sorry in the sense of I'm sorry. I'm sorry in the sense of I'm sorry. quick, start the music. I need a break. This show has not started out very, very well tonight. We're going to be joined next hour by Professor Louis Silverstein. We're going to discuss his book, Deep Spirit and Great Heart, Living in Marijuana Consciousness. I can't wait.
Footsteps echo down the hall. Stranger by the day. Stranger by the day.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glasters, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
If you think people are more important than corporations, you need to see The Progressive Populist. Twice a month, we feature columnists such as Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and other plutocrat pluckers from around the country. We'll send you a free sample copy if you'll call us toll-free 1-800-205-7067 or see our website at populist.com. That's 1-800-205-7067 or populist.com or The Progressive Populist, the newspaper for Main Street USA.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and four pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped five sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
Andy Dave Rush here, inviting you to listen to Home Improvement USA. Ken Walchek from Chicago's number one hardware store, Clark Devon Hardware, John Seip from United Marketing Force, Jay Brentlinger from Orban, and, of course, Danny Lipford from today's Homeowner Television Show, take your home improvement questions. Our guests include industry experts from across the country. We've been America's most useful talk show for 10 years, so join us for Home Improvement USA every Saturday, 2 to 4 Eastern, and rebroadcast 8 to 10 Eastern right here on IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to Lifestyles of the Wet and Stinky. We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. Some of you may be alarmed by subversive propaganda spread by that liberal media filter, Mike Malloy, who distorts the truth every weeknight at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Rest assured, our sources at Fox News confirm that we have a fabulous, booming economy and enjoy daily glorious victories in the numerous fronts of the ongoing terror wars. And besides, any problems we're experiencing are all Clinton's fault. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to Lifestyles of the Wet and Stinky. We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
Yeah.
talk radio right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
Five before the hour, we have this professor coming up to talk to us about reefer after the break. And then at the bottom of the of that half hour, we're going to play these sound bites for you. Bill Clinton from the DNC convention, August 15th, 2000. Really weird to hear it. Dan is calling, one of our over-the-road truckers. He's calling from somewhere in Nebraska, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
Going fine, sir.
I just had a comment and a question. The comment is, you can see from all the emails that you have a lot more than 16 listeners. And, I know because I talk to other truck drivers out there, mostly owner-operators, because, you know, they're small business owners.
Right, right.
And they listen to the show, and we talk and joke about it. The question I had was, you were poo-pooing the rebroadcast, but actually, during the rebroadcast, you set a phone number, which is for the Capital switchboard,
mm-hmm.
and I put it in my phone, and I was just calling for more specifics. You know, you could call and say no, and I was wondering, you know, who answers the phone there, and do I say I want to talk to somebody, because I'm going to call.
Yeah, I don't know what show. I think the show that was being streamed was very, very, very old, over a year old. But when you call the Capitol switchboard, that's to get your either your senator or your member of Congress. And in the times when I've called, I usually you can get a direct line. There's a directory that you can you can follow the prompts and get the directory to get your senator or your member of Congress. And if you get a live operator, you just ask for whomever you're calling for, you know, what whatever senator or member of Congress, and they will either connect you or give you the number.
See, I've got my senator is Chuck Schumer, so he's done, you know, he's done a lot to, well, I can't say I've been that strong in his record lately, but I know he's spoken out against Bush in the past.
Well, Hillary Clinton's your other senator, right?
Yes, right. The other senator is Hillary Clinton. I kind of, one last thing I wanted to say, and I don't want to take up too much time, but is that John Kerry has, I'm a big Dean supporter, but
mm-hmm.
John Kerry said the first thing he would do is call Hillary Clinton, ask her to be vice president.
When did he say that?
he said that, I heard him say that, I think I was listening to C-SPAN, and he said that, it sounds kind of silly, but you know, I think if he had her as a vice presidential candidate, they would totally smash Bush. I mean,
that's interesting. I hadn't heard anything about that. Are you sure you heard that?
I'm absolutely positive.
Oh, my God.
I'm absolutely positive.
That would be.
I was listening to C-SPAN because you were being preempted by sports.
Yeah.
And they played some soundbite of John Kerry saying on the microphone.
Was he kidding, though? I mean, was he kidding or was he being.
The audience, you know, broke into screaming applause.
I'll be damned.
So,
I'll be damned.
Some very disappointed people if he was kidding.
Yeah, we'll try to find that. Hey, Dan, thanks for checking in, pal. Drive safely, okay?
Good talking to you. I will. Thanks.
All right, sir. You're a long way from home, so be careful.
I will.
All right, sir. Appreciate your call. All right, folks, stay with us. Professor Silverstein, I think, coming up next, and all kinds of fun and frivolity. I'm Mike Malloy.
You're listening to Mike Malloy on the IE America Radio Network. Copyright 2004.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Who says Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
Ooh,
you hate me?
Why not put something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
Yeah, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. The U.S. economy created just 112,000 new jobs in January, far fewer than expected, government data showed on Friday in a disappointing report that will likely weigh on George W. Bush's election campaign. The fifth straight monthly gain in payrolls outside farming followed a revised increase of 16,000 new jobs in December, the Labor Department said. The unemployment rate ticked down to 5.6%, the lowest rate since January 2002, from 5.7% the previous month, but those numbers are taken from a separate, smaller survey. Analysts had been expecting the improving economy to create 150,000 new jobs in January. They were looking for the unemployment rate to hold steady at 5.7%. George W. Bush's public support dropped sharply over the past month, especially among older voters, political independents, and people in the Midwest, an Associated Press poll found. And for the first time, more voters in this poll's 2 years of tracking the question said they would definitely vote against Bush than they would definitely vote for him. Bush's approval rating stood at 47% in the AP Ipsos poll taken early in February, down from 56% approval just a month ago. Half, or 50%, said they disapproved in the latest poll. Bush's 47% rating is the same as his father's at this stage in his presidency 12 years ago, before he lost to Bill Clinton. Democratic presidential frontrunner John Kerry is poised to secure the backing of former rival Dick Gephardt and his once loyal labor unions, further clearing the Massachusetts senator's path towards the nomination. His opponents, meanwhile, are seeking to slow his rapid rise and establish themselves as his alternative. Howard Dean is camping out in Wisconsin with hopes of resurrecting his struggling campaign, and Sons of the South John Edwards and Wesley Clark are stumping in that region as well. The upcoming campaign calendar likely will heap even more momentum and more delegates onto Kerry as well. His rivals haven't made much of an effort in Michigan, Washington, or Maine, where contests this weekend offer 228 delegates combined. More news after this.
In an instant, my son could make anyone smile. In an instant, he was gone. The driver was looking for other cars. But he didn't watch out for my son crossing the street. Imagine, in the time it takes to stop for someone in the crosswalk, you could save a life or change yours forever.
A message from the Federal Highway Administration.
Mohegan Sun pastry chefs have been working hard all week to prove that you can have your cake and eat it too. They're building what they hope will be the world's largest wedding cake. The seven-tier cake weighs more than 14,000 pounds and measures about 17 feet tall and is making its debut at the casino in Uncasville, Connecticut on Sunday. They're hoping to top the Guinness Book World Record set by a 5,300-pound cake baked in June 2003. This is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Hey, what is it?
I realize I love you, but as long as you're with Jessica, there can never be anything between us.
Cass, there's no need to cry. Besides, I've got really great news.
You're leaving Jessica?
No. I just saved a load of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico. I saved. I thought that meant something to you.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Anyone who still thinks that there's not a dime's worth of difference between the two parties should take a look at a Washington squabble over the dime itself. A gaggle of top Republican leaders in Congress, including the odious legislative thug Tom DeLay, are furiously pushing a bill to alter the dime. They want to remove the likeness of Franklin D. Roosevelt from the coin and replace it with a countenance of Ronald Reagan. In a time when America's health care system is failing, when the federal budget is $500 billion short, when middle-class jobs are disappearing, when our troops are dying every day in Iraq and Afghanistan, isn't it comforting to see that our country's lawmakers do not let these actual problems deter them from getting down in the slime of petty partisanship for something as inconsequential as displacing a Democratic president with a Republican one on our 10-cent piece? Democrats in Congress are responding with their own effort to keep FDR on the coin. They point out that his face was put on it not merely because he was president, but especially because he had founded the March of Dimes organization, through which America's children collected the dimes that funded research into polio, the awful disease that had put Roosevelt himself in a wheelchair. Thanks to those dimes, a vaccine was developed that effectively ended polio in our country. But Democrats are not alone in opposing this effort to scrape FDR off the dime. None other than Nancy Reagan opposes it. Indeed, Ronald Reagan himself has proudly noted that he voted for Roosevelt in all four of his presidential elections, and Reagan cited the Democrat as the greatest president of the century. This is Jim Hightower saying, nonetheless, the rabidly partisan Republican leaders are still demanding FDR's head. If they win, will they then go after the nickel, which features Jefferson, the first Democrat? To help stop this silliness on the dime, call the office of Representative Jim McGovern, 202-225-6101.
Tia Carrera is on the front in Playboy. I think what you have done is give a little more license to people who have a few more years on them.
Probably. A few more years on them?
Well,
yeah.
Stop.
A few more years?
No. I'm talking about... No.
Like the tread on a tire.
Yeah, never mind. I can't make it better.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
On the IE America Radio Network. Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network. Right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
The words that I remember from my childhood still are true. That there's none so blind as those who will not see. I know you're out there somewhere.
Welcome back. 7:30 past the hour. If you're just joining us, the stations that just joined us now here in the second hour of the program, welcome to the program. We're at 800-TALK-YES. Dr. Lewis Silverstein is a professor in the Department of Liberal Education at Columbia College in Chicago. He is also the author of a book titled Deep Spirit and Great Heart, Living in Marijuana Consciousness, and he joins us now from Chicago. Dr. Silverstein, thanks for being on the program tonight.
Good evening, Mike.
I want to quote something here in the note that you sent to my producer, Kathy. The book is described as a first-person account of thoughtful, healing, sensuous, and provocative journeys into the earthly and spiritual aspects of awakened existence and being while under the influence of cannabis sativa. Are you to marijuana like Carlos Castaneda was to peyote?
Ganja, who is the person that the book is really about, it's his journeys, yes, is to marijuana as Carlos Castaneda is to the substance that he journeyed on.
Mm-hmm. Now, it says here that you teach the subject of drugs in your classes at Columbia College.
Yes.
How does one go about teaching the subject of drugs? I'm familiar with Andrew Weil's work from years ago when he used to write for Psychology Today and used to talk about stoned consciousness. But how do you teach a class like this at Columbia College?
Well, the way I teach that class is like I teach every other class, which is to ask students what is it they want to learn about the subject. You know, what questions do they have in their mind? What experiences do they want to reflect upon?
What sort of answers do you get when you ask that question?
They first look at me and they incredulously to say, are we really going to have an honest conversation about drugs?
Mm-hmm.
Because they've been brought up where the cultural message is say no
right.
or say nothing. So They test me out at first, and they find out, well, yes, we're going to have an honest conversation about drugs, and that we're going to look at the fact of the matter that drugs can be either used or misused, and if used, they can really heighten the human experience.
Is that the purpose, then, or the focus, focal point of your class, your lectures, that drugs can be used in a positive way?
That's one of the focal points. Really, the focal point is to help students, guide them, walk through a sea of drugs. I mean, drugs, legal and illegal, are an ocean that we're all swimming in. You know, my students, my children, and I see myself as someone who has much experience in the field and will help them walk through what I call this sea of drugs. So if they decide to use drugs, they will use them and not abuse them. At the same time, I do make them aware of the fact that there are many ways to get high, drugs being one of them.
Well, I think that was Andrew Weil's point, that to reach a real state of enlightened consciousness requires a deep meditation and clearing one's mind. And as a workable shortcut, although it is a shortcut, drugs that alter consciousness like peyote or psilocybin or marijuana or hashish or what have you will affect a close approximation of what deep meditation will do. Let me ask you this. Where does one draw the line in discussing, and I hate this term, recreational drugs, because there are literally hundreds of thousands of people in prison in this country who use recreational drugs. I have used recreational drugs. There's probably not an illegal street drug I haven't tried at one time or another in my life. I'm not in prison. And that causes me some upset. Not that I'm not in prison, but that other people who have done exactly the same as I are in prison. But my question is, Where does one draw the line? Do you say, okay, anything that's found in a natural state, like peyote, like marijuana, like opium poppies, these are drugs that can be used and have been used by humans, by medicine men and women and healers and so on and so forth throughout recorded history. But what about when you get into manufactured drugs, like the misuse of, say, OxyContin or morphine or heroin? Explain, if you would, or for that matter, cocaine, which does not exist in a natural state.
I don't distinguish, as some people do, between, you know, saying that something that's natural and something that is manufactured. But all manufactured things have at their essence a natural, you know, a natural beginning there. There are certain drugs.
Let me just back up on that. The destructive power of the nuclear weapon has its origins in the atom. But I'm really looking for you to try to help me with this, not to kind of pass over it.
No.
When somebody comes to you and says, I use cocaine, as opposed to someone who says I chew coca leaves,
right. Do
you not make a distinction there?
Yes, I make a distinction, but the distinction, you know, that I make is certainly one should use drugs, you know, whatever drug is, in the least harmful way, in the most positive manner there. Mm-hmm. But cocaine, and, you know, the subject, I hope we'll get back to marijuana, cocaine can be used or misused.
Let's go back to marijuana. What to you is the most engaging or important property of cannabis?
There are many. I mean, certainly in my life and probably in your life, too, and many of our listeners, is that it can lead to a state of sexual ecstasy. And I think that sexuality, you know, that is a gift that we humans have. And if we can take that gift and incorporate it into our relationships in a way that enhances the human experience, you know, then marijuana has played a very, very positive role there. I certainly believe and have experienced the use of marijuana in terms of developing a relationship with the rest of all of creation, you know, the environment there. It can heighten one's ecological consciousness there. I certainly believe that marijuana can be used to help one have a more positive family relationships. And this is one that I think is very important, Mike, is that, and it's the second part of the book, the title, Living in Marijuana Consciousness. Whatever you're taking to be high, you know, whether it's meditation or art or marijuana there, it leads you to an experience of what I call being high. And at that moment, you see yourself, you know, in a way that perhaps you haven't seen yourself before. You see human existence in a different way there.
Would you then recommend that people remain high, quote, all the time?
Well, high, yes. But high, there's different aspects of high. And as I was saying...
Okay, let me rephrase it. Would you recommend that people use marijuana to reach this particular highness that we're talking about all the time?
I don't know what all the time is. I think it varies with the individual.
Wake up in the morning, smoke a joint, go to bed at night, smoking a joint.
Well, if certainly Mr. Louis Armstrong, you know, used marijuana all the time, and he used it, he did not misuse it. He did use it early in the morning.
What about those of us who don't play trumpet?
Well, we're playing something else. You don't, I mean, I'm not going to smoke or recommend anyone smoke while you're going to be performing surgery or perhaps driving a car or if you're a motorman. But when you get off work, when you're not in the car, then I certainly think if your experience of marijuana has led you to a higher state of being, you know, both spirituality but also in relationship to one's wife, one's children, then take it.
Well, I can agree with some of what you're saying, but we all know, I think you know, I know, you would know, that marijuana is a residual drug. In other words, while one does not build up a tolerance to it, certainly, I'm living, breathing proof of that, one does not build up a tolerance to it, one does retain the active ingredient of marijuana in one's liver or one's system for an extended period of time. So if you have someone like the surgeon you're referring to, or a jet pilot, or someone like that who is a regular toker or smoker, I would be disinclined to go to that person for heart surgery. I would be disinclined to go to that, to get on that person's airplane. So, do you make a distinction between advocating stone consciousness for people like you and me who do not function in critical employments, and people who do?
If stone consciousness heightens your life, whether you are a digging ditches or selling popcorn or a surgeon, then use it. But you use it in such a way that it allows you to perform what you're doing at a particular moment with reason, you know, not just with, in a sense that, you know, what's going on right now is not particularly important. Surgeons, yes, marijuana stays in your body, but it does, the effect can dissipate there, and you use it, and perhaps you've learned that you don't perform surgery for the next day or the next 15 hours or the next 4 hours there. I certainly believe that stone consciousness.
Right. Well, just going by the total of your book, title of your book, there is a you reference marijuana consciousness as opposed to non-marijuana consciousness. Yes. And if I am a delicate neurosurgeon or a neurosurgeon who gets involved in delicate operations, obviously my consciousness has got to be in totally. I think, in the physical world, because if I happen to see a neuron that, and I'm stoned, and that neuron kind of winks at me, and I decide to cut it out, I may have just made a person paralyzed. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I understand, Mike. At the same time, I talk about disciplined use of marijuana.
Yeah.
Disciplined use of marijuana. And
but isn't the whole reason for using marijuana is to drop discipline?
No.
It's to loosen the strictures, loosen the discipline that society has put down.
It's to see what you're describing right now is to see things differently. And I say the challenge is, as it is with meditation, you know, meditation is residual with me. I've been meditating for something like 43 years. I'm 63 years old. When I meditate, the state of meditation or the residual effect stays with me for days and days and days. Does that mean, as a surgeon, I should not then meditate there?
But there's a difference. When you meditate, you're not introducing a chemical into your system that will alter your perception of reality.
Well, I am certainly releasing chemicals in my system that can alter reality.
Right. You're releasing part of your natural body chemistry.
That, so that's what marijuana does.
But when you smoke marijuana, you are introducing THC. Hold on just a second. We'll come back in a second, Dr. Silverstein. We have to take a... Silverstein? What is it, Gabby? Silverstein. I'm sorry. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
I hear your story. Would you believe he had an eye infection? God's name.
welcome and good evening. Soon, one of these lucky ladies will be crowned Miss Kumquat of Monroe County. The envelope, please. Miss Debbie Andrews. I have good news.
I can't believe I won.
You didn't.
Huh?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
Welcome back to the It's Not Your Fault You Didn't Know show. We're talking about the best way to spend your weekends, and we have two special guests right now. On the phone is the Terminator himself, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, Arnold. And our other guest in the studio is George W. How are you today, Mr. Bush?
What's the matter?
Okay, all of our listeners want to know what you do on your weekends. Well, I'm here to tell you that you can listen to the best of left-of-center political talk radio on Sundays now on IE America Radio Network.
That's amazing.
George, your final words.
Stop it!
Thanks for joining us. Tune in tomorrow, same time. Have a nice day.
Just shut up!
The best of progressive talk radio can be heard on Sundays now on IE America Radio Network. For more information, call 1-800-397-8255 or go to ieamericaradio.com.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or a fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to ieamericaradio.com. I'll be there.
Hey, conservatives, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. Here's more Mike Malloy.
24 past the hour. We are talking with Dr. Louis Silverstein, teaches at Columbia College in Chicago. About his book, Deep Spirit and Great Heart, Living in Marijuana Consciousness. What about drug laws? We only have a couple of minutes left here, Dr. Silverstein. What about drug laws in this country?
Working very well to create a corrupt police force, to enrich people who invest and build prisons, to take people of color and incarcerate them rather than educate them. I think they're working very well. if that's your goal.
If that's the goal, yeah. Well, I think both of us understand, I think most people understand, that given the history of this country and given the drift toward neo-fascism, drug laws are only going to get worse, not better. Given that, wouldn't it be better for people like you and me in whatever spheres of influence we have to advise people to stay the hell away from drugs, because it almost guarantees that you're going to get in trouble with the fascists that have taken over this country?
I don't advise people to get involved with drugs. I don't tell them not to. If they decide to move in that direction, my role is to help them walk through that path there. Mike, I'm going to say that the fact of the matter is, young people today, I mean, I've taught high school, I've taught college. The main thing I'm dealing with young people in terms of politics is the belief that they can't do anything, that the system is so powerful, you know, so totalitarian, that nothing is going to change.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about drugs, I tell them that the drug laws are going to change, but only if they are going to walk and talk and work to change that. If I start out with, you know, the things are going to get worse, so on and so forth there, I'm just feeding their belief system right now. So I understand why people say that, but we really have to say we can change things. You know, we're coming to Chicago to change America.
Well, I certainly can agree with you in theory. In application, though, I just wonder. I know we don't have too much time left,
yeah,
but marijuana consciousness, as briefly as you can, how does that differ from non-marijuana consciousness?
It makes you see and experience a possibility that is different than what you experience during every day. Your possibility of your relationships with other people, your relationship to the environment, it gives us an opening. And then the challenge is to take that and bring that realization into daily life. That's the hard thing. Getting high is not difficult. Taking the high and making it into life high is the challenge. A high experience is not a high life. And what I meant by discipline is that take the high experience and discipline yourself in such a way that it becomes a high life.
Okay, that certainly makes sense to me. Do you have a lot of students who like to get into your classes?
I teach courses in peace studies, deaf and dying, and drugs and my courses are overflowing.
I'll bet they are.
Overflowing.
Dr. Silverstein, thanks for taking time to talk with us. I do appreciate it.
Mike, thank you. Can I just quickly mention my book is available from Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. Just keyword the title of my name, and you'll have an incredible reading experience.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Mike, for having me on.
Thank you, Dr. Silverstein. I appreciate it.
Here, try some of this before we go.
The name of the book is Deep Spirit and Great Heart, Living in Marijuana Consciousness. A couple of people called in and said to Kathy, is this a parody?
A fella came to town one day just looking for some weed. He claimed that he had cancer and claimed he had a need to take a toke, a little smoke, a pot from time to time for his appetite and his nausea. Can you believe that line? Now I'm the local sheriff, and I believe it's my job to not give in to every whim of the whiny, wimpy mob. Cause I've seen what that weed can do. It drives a man insane. And besides, it's good for any man to put up with some pain.
1,000 doctors can't be wrong, except, of course, in this one case. So all you good folks sing along. Let's put them potheads in their place.
They say it helps them ease the pain and keep their breakfast down. They'll never use the devil weed, not in my little town.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show, 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time, Monday through Friday on IE America Radio Network.
world of statistics, the human impact on the natural environment is enormous and abnormal. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. When it comes to consumption of the Earth's natural resources, the impact of humanity is far outside the range of what's normal for populations of many other warm-blooded creatures. That's one finding in a study by Chuck Fowler, an ecologist with the National Marine Mammal Laboratory in Seattle, Washington. Fowler normally studies the way entire populations of marine mammals affect their surroundings. He expanded his research to see how people compare with other species in terms of the ecological footprint we leave on the natural world.
There are lots of ways of measuring those footprints, and they range all the way from our consumption of food resources, our production of carbon dioxide, our occupation of space. You name it, there are just lots of ways of measuring the footprint, and what we are doing now is using the footprints that all species have and making comparisons between humans and other species in a way where we're getting an assessment of what works.
In part of his study, Fowler compared the size of the human population to numbers for 63 other mammals that are roughly our size and weight. The list included animals such as seals and white-tailed deer. The statistical comparison produced a range of population sizes that would be considered normal for each species. The upper limit of normal population sizes were in the tens of millions, but no higher. Fowler says a world filled with a billion white-tailed deer would be quite abnormal. In the context of this study, he says abnormal clearly applies to the human population, which now stands at 6 billion people. Fowler's research was recently published in a journal of the Royal Society of London. The article carries the title, Is Humanity Sustainable? Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this
Sunday
for Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with an important public service announcement about sleep deprivation. Many of you are not obtaining the 10 hours of nightly sleep necessary for true patriotic Americans like my husband Georgie because you're staying awake to listen to the Mike Malloy Show from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. This dangerous behavior puts you at risk of daytime blackouts, diminished worker productivity, ghastly hallucinations, and erectile dysfunction. So when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Listen, there's all kinds of ways to treat substance. I understand that.
27 before the hour. I'm not sure what that interview was all about, but what the hell. You never know when you tune into this program, right? Audio from Bill Clinton coming up in just a second. John is calling from Philadelphia. It's very hard to say Philadelphia with my mouth in the condition it's in. But hey, John, how you doing?
Hi, Mike. That Bush thing, I know how to deal with substance.
Yeah, right. He does, doesn't he?
Oh, man. Almost blew my what I was thinking. I had two things I wanted to mention to you. One is just what I've been able to do in the past couple of days for Dennis Kucinich. I'm a delegate to be from Pennsylvania for Dennis, and I've been
well, good for you.
A lot of signatures and just been stepping in some good luck.
Mm-hmm.
I've been calling people that signed up as volunteers, and I tapped into a really great source of Democrats that, man, I think we're overlooking. 80-year-olds. I went into a group of people that called me young man.
That always feels good, doesn't it?
At 57, I got to tell you.
Yeah, that feels good.
Mighty
right.
Good. Let that young man speak.
Boy, what do you got to say here today, boy?
Yeah.
Holy Toledo.
Yeah.
These guys, these people are hot. You know, a lot of these people are, talk about Roosevelt Democrats. These people are Roosevelt Democrats, and they're pissed.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. My mother's in that group. She's 89, just turned 89, and just as fiery as you can be when you're 89. I mean, how fiery can you be when it's all you can do, get up to go pee? Yep. But she still has that Roosevelt Democrat fire in her, and I know exactly what you're talking about. Old people, I think, are one of the key factors in this election, because old folks vote. They would not miss an election, and I think they are angry enough at Bush. Even old Republicans are angry enough at Bush that they're going to make a difference.
I used up my entire supply of TrueMajority.org pens. You've seen those pens with the
yes, I have. Uh-huh.
The bar chart that pulls out. Boy, that was that went over really well.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I wanted to call about is to see what kind of speculation you were doing now that the Dean campaign is pretty much dead in the water, and it's, I think, pretty much clear to most of his supporters that he's not going to get the nomination, and may very, very well, I wouldn't be surprised to see him drop out, especially if he doesn't do well in...
Well, he said he's going to drop out if he doesn't win Wisconsin. I don't want to say the Dean campaign is dead in the water. There's been no forward momentum, sure. I remember people saying that about Carter's second campaign that I worked on. I remember people saying, and it pissed me off, I remember people saying that about McCarthy. I remember people saying that about, who else? Bobby Kennedy was blown away. And I don't know. If you talk to a Dean supporter, John, and I know a bunch of them, either it's false bravado and they are just putting on a front, or they are determined to continue this fight. Dean has been savaged by the media.
I know, for all the wrong reasons. I don't like the guy's politics because he's a right winger, you know. Because he came on with the support of well-intended people from the internet, let's say well-intended liberals, and he's made it clear to the press that he feels that he is in no way influenced by those people,
right?
And that he has since buddied up with the likes of other mm-hmm. Washington insiders like Gore, and he courts those people. So I mean, he's clearly announced himself to be not only having been a pretty blasé, do nothing Vermont governor in a state that is noted for being progressive, but a lot of his supporters, at least on the internet, you can see saying that, geez, you know, I really liked him, but I'm really getting upset now that he's becoming so conservative, and now that mm-hmm. they're finally.
Well, he's not becoming, you know this, I know this, he's not becoming anything.
They're becoming aware of it.
Yeah, they're becoming aware of it. We've been saying on this program for 6 months, anybody who thinks Howard Dean is a liberal, which is how these filthy, disgusting Republicans tried to paint him, is a fool. Or just gullible as hell. Howard Dean is no more of a liberal than I'm a conservative. He's a very conservative Democrat, and I hate that term. I've said before, conservative Democrat is a contradiction in terms. There is no such thing. Bill Clinton was a Republican. Al Gore was a Republican. They were lightweight Republicans. You want a Democrat? You go for Dennis Kucinich. Period. End of story. If you don't want a Democrat, then for Christ's sake, okay. But don't. You know, I get so pissed.
That was pretty much the theme of the essay that I sent out today. It was titled something like "It's Over."
Yeah.
Dean is gone, and in there I alluded to the mistake that we've talked about, that you have talked about on mm-hmm. on your program a number of times, namely that the big mistake that the Democrats made both in 2000 and again in the congressional election of 2002 was to try to think that they could move the Democratic candidates to the right, appeal to that so-called swing.
Yeah, and look what happened to him. And look,
get crushed.
And look what happened to him. That's right.
And they're doing the same thing now. They're allowing the Republicans to define the scope and the terms of the mm-hmm. debate.
Well, that's one thing I give Howard Dean credit for. He taught these pink tutu Democrats, as Bart Kopp has identified them, to stand up on their hind legs and fight. I'm not saying he taught them to be Democrats. He did not. But he taught them that it's okay to call George W. Bush a traitorous bastard that he is. Howard Dean did teach these Democratic candidates it's okay to be strong in your belief. It's okay to kick back at George Bush. But so what? I mean,
that's about the only thing I like about Kerry is that miserable failure line that he
right.
But well, I guess what I'm most concerned about now, let's say that he does, that is to say Howard Dean, back out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of his folks are pissed that he spent over $5 million on Trippy. Mm-hmm. And then didn't pay his you know, his regular staff.
Right.
And so they see that, and he spent all that money somewhat frivolously and came out in pretty bad shape.
So who's he going to endorse if he does drop out?
That's what I'm wondering. I mentioned this a couple of times. The only Dean folks that I've ever met in person, mm-hmm, have been at anti-war demonstrations.
Right.
And I thought pretty much, I mean, everything that we talked about was, we were on the same wavelength. And, you know, they only would, basically they'd say, well, because my favorite line, Kucinich is unelectable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. That's cool. That's,
well, I'll tell you what. My opinion, John, if Howard Dean does not get first place in the Wisconsin primary, if he does what he says all over the front page of the New York Times today, and we talked about it last night, he says it's over if he doesn't win Wisconsin. If that's the case, and I have no reason to doubt him, I think Howard Dean is as honest as he is possible to be and be a politician. I really do. If he drops out and does not throw his support to Dennis Kucinich, then Howard Dean will display himself as a massive hypocrite. If he backs any other candidate in the race, then he will completely destroy the image that he's built up as a non-corporate Democrat, which is what I think he's tried to do. He's tried to make himself the non-corporate Democrat. So if he backs out and throws his support to any of these other candidates other than Dennis Kucinich, then by God, to me, and I don't care about anybody else, to me, Howard Dean has just exposed himself as a complete, full-blown hypocrite. Does that make sense? You understand what I'm saying there?
Absolutely. Now, do me another favor. Take it one step further. Let's say that it does happen, and let's say that he does back Kucinich. What do you think that's for the Kucinich campaign?
I think it would be good for the Kucinich campaign. I would hope that the Dean supporters, as enthusiastic and hardworking and spirit-filled as they are, would take the cue from their man and bust their ass for Dennis Kucinich, and if nothing else, take it to the convention. Don't let Kerry, don't let Edwards, don't let Clark, don't let any of these people have a lock. What the hell is a convention about? There's one Democrat in this race, and I know I piss people off when I say that, because I know I have good, solid listeners who are Clark supporters, good, solid listeners who are Kerry supporters, who are Edwards supporters, and I'm sorry, I go by what these people stand for, what their record has been, what they have said, in Clark's case, what he has done, not as a politician, but as a human being. These people may be potential leaders, but they are not Democrats. There is one Democrat definable in this race, and it's not Howard Dean. It's Dennis Kucinich. And I defy anyone to prove me wrong. Can't be done.
Now, the question is, how do we get people to look at this like a business scenario, like a marketing scenario, in a marketing case, and we you and I even alluded this to on your program a while ago, that what I suggest is this, and we agree that Dennis is completely different, Dennis is completely different than Bush, but I suspect that in the mind of the average voter, Wilma Walmart, Wilma doesn't see a whole lot of difference between the Democratic candidates who want to keep us in Iraq,
mm-hmm,
promise us changes in health care,
well,
promise us
right,
something nebulous about the Patriot Act, promise something nebulous about jobs and NAFTA. I don't think that the average voter is going to see a whole lot of difference between them. And what scares me is if they don't see a difference, then they're not going to see any reason to change at all.
I agree. And listen, John, I've got to move on here. I agree with what you're saying. And listen, thanks for checking in, pal.
Hey, take care.
All right. I do appreciate it. I agree with what John is saying. John's right. It would take a marketing campaign. Because that's where we are. We're in marketing hell. That's United States of America 2004, and John is right. Nader was right 4 years ago. That Democrats and Republicans not completely right. Nader no. When he said there's no difference between Al Gore and George W. Bush, Nader was either being totally disingenuous or he's a very stupid man. And I don't think Nader's a stupid man. I don't know what that was all about. There is difference between Democratic Party principles and Republican Party principles. But I'll tell you what, in my opinion, the candidates are pretty much all the same. What is it? Except around the margins, and we are in a period in this nation's development where around the margins is where the differences are being made. I acknowledge that. I understand that. But again, it comes down. There's two things at play here. ABB, anybody but Bush. Bush is a tyrant. His entire clique of neo-fascists that are running this country are destroying this country. Now, any American who can't see that is a damn fool. And doesn't deserve the right to vote. So get rid of Bush, ABB, anybody but Bush. I can play that game. I will play that game. I will go to vote for John Kerry and take as many people as I can stuff into my pickup truck to go with me to vote for John Kerry, if John Kerry is the nominee. But I will do so knowing damn well I'm not voting for a Democrat. I will do so knowing that I'm voting for a man who is not Bush. There is one Democrat in this race. If Wesley Clark is the nominee, I will vote for Wesley Clark, even though his use of depleted uranium disgusts me. But I will vote for him. Because I realize something here, just like you do. If we don't get rid of Bush and this group of thugs, that's it. This experiment is over. It's done. It lasted 200-some years, and it's finished. Put a fork in it. But there is one Democrat in this race. I had somebody email me the other night, and you're very pissed off because I was saying the same thing the other night. You know, no, Bill Clinton was a Democrat. Al Gore was a Democrat. Howard Dean's a Democrat. Wesley Clark's a Democrat. Okay. You know, that's what makes baseball. What makes baseball games and talk radio differences of opinion. But when I look at the record, damn it, the record of these people, and compare it to the definition of a capital D Democrat, there's only one person that stands there, one person left standing in this group, and it's Dennis Kucinich. But if it becomes necessary, I will vote for Wesley Clark. I will vote for John Edwards. I will vote for Howard Dean. I will vote for John Kerry if it becomes necessary. That's how much of a whore I am. Or not. Maybe that's how desperate I have become to see my country on my watch not go down the toilet in the hands of this Bush crime family. Because, you know, I have people say, well, Malloy, you're nothing but a whore. You know, you talk about this, you talk about that, and you want... Look, their argument is, don't vote for anybody if you don't vote for Kucinich. And my response to that is, go screw yourself. I am not going to sit here, like I said, on my watch and do nothing as my country swirls down the commode thanks to George Bush and these monsters that now run things. All right, I guess we're going to have to do the Clinton thing after the next break, but what the hell. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Are you perfectly comfortable going to war without moral sanction against the law? Are you perfectly It's a huge honor to be the greatest, to be the president of the greatest country in the world.
Gaze at your daughters and gaze at your sons. Ask yourself this question over again. Would you be perfectly happy if it happened to them? If you're perfectly comfortable, come into our friends.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
If you think people are more important than corporations, you need to see The Progressive Populist. Twice a month, we feature columnists such as Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and other plutocrat pluckers from around the country. We'll send you a free sample copy if you'll call us toll-free 1-800-205-7067 or see our website at populist.com. That's 1-800-205-7067 or populist.com or The Progressive Populist, the newspaper for Main Street USA.
Thieves in High Places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and four pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped five sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Kathy. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
Tune into IE America Radio Network weekdays for the best in progressive talk radio. The Tom Hartman Show.
Greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in the American way from coast to coast. You're listening to the nation's largest nationally syndicated daytime progressive talk show.
Family Talk.
This is Family Talk with Dr. Mike Riera.
The All-American Talk Radio Show.
All-American Talk Radio with Peter B. Collins.
The Mike Malloy Show.
I know I have a reputation of being fiery, hard-edged, passionate, outspoken, opinionated, and sometimes explosive. And that reputation is well-deserved because I am. I'm a liberal with a microphone, and that makes me dangerous.
For more information on these shows and other shows, or to listen live, visit us on the web at ieamericaradio.com.
The Tom Hartman Show.
Yeah, we're going to catch him doing something right. Senator Bob Graham of Florida said today that he will file a bill to prohibit charging service members for meals while they are hospitalized as a result of injuries or illnesses suffered while in combat or training for combat. Graham says, how can we justify spending billions of dollars on no-bid contracts to rebuild Iraq, then turn around and charge an injured soldier $8.10 a day for meals while he's being treated for war injuries? Marine Staff Sergeant Bill Merwin of Nevada, he was billed $243 for his meals while he was in the hospital because his foot got blown off in Iraq. Ain't privatization wonderful? So Bob Graham says he's going to put into Congress a law saying no more. It's against the law to charge service members for their meals. Thank you, Bob Graham. Well done.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Five before the hour. Comments from Bill Clinton coming up after the break. Jerry is calling from Sparks, Nevada. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, Mike. Last time I called was kind of a drive-by. That's the way I do it. You didn't run me off. You thought you did, but don't worry about it.
Oh, okay.
Hey, I'm a D supporter, but I think I'm jumping a chip to a Kucinich, because the war is not the biggest issue. It's a corporatization. I could probably should listen to Tom Hartman more. I know that's more his shtick, but I like the way you talk. So,
well, what do you mean? The issue is corporatization, and that what Dean is anti-corporation too, isn't he?
Well, I mean, you're saying that maybe he's not so much, and that's why I was on board with him, and I thought he had the juice to get it done.
Yeah, well, I think he's not beholden to corporations. Right.
Yeah.
He's not a corporate Democrat. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Kucinich is totally off the chart where it concerns corporations. Even the Institute for Public Accuracy or any of these the political watchdog groups, after fine-tooth combing Kucinich's record, the only thing they could come up with was a trip he made someplace out of the country that was sponsored by a peace group.
Right.
And, I mean, that's it.
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
I'm not worried about the war. I don't think we need a candidate to take him down on that, because he's going to fall on that sword by its own weight. It's so obvious, and that's going to just go along as a separate campaign.
Dean or Kucinich?
I'm talking about the issue of the war taking Bush down.
Oh, I see. Right.
And so what I want is a candidate that'll really get out there and talk about how evil corporatization is. It's like strangling a country to death by taking their resources.
That would be Kucinich then.
Yeah. Because if you corporatize everything and take everybody's jobs away, they have no resources. They can't live. They're struggling from day to day.
Well, just remember what Mussolini said. Don't call it fascism. Call it what it is: corporatism.
Well,
and we are so close to it. Dick Cheney is Il Duce or Das Führer. Dick Cheney represents. He is definable fascism.
Well, I hope I get to call you again one more time before you're off the air, and then I'll follow.
Well, we're going
to
be here. We got 15 more shows.
Yeah,
that's 3 weeks.
And then I'll follow you where you are on your web.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Jerry. I appreciate it. Hey, listen, dude, take care. Have a nice weekend.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, sir. Quick break here, folks. We'll be back. Don't you dare go away.
You're listening to Mike Malloy on the IE America Radio Network. Copyright 2004.
See the look on Nancy's face.
What's she doing?
I asked her if she wanted a boogie, and she just gave me this condescending sneer.
Is it the condescending, I don't boogie?
How would I keep up with her?
Right.
Boogieing.
Nancy can boogie. Yeah. Doug, I've never seen you dance.
Kind of looks like a frog in a blender.
I could dance with you till the cows come home. On second thought, I'd rather dance with the cows when you come home.
On the IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. George W. Bush's public support dropped sharply over the past month, especially among older voters, political independents, and people in the Midwest, an Associated Press poll found. And for the first time, more voters in this poll's 2 years of tracking the question said they would definitely vote against Bush than they would definitely vote for him. Bush's approval rating stood at 47% in the AP Ipsos poll taken early in February, down from 56% approval just a month ago. Half, or 50%, said they disapproved in the latest poll. Bush's 47% rating is the same as his father's at this stage in his presidency 12 years ago, before he lost to Bill Clinton. Democratic presidential frontrunner John Kerry is poised to secure the backing of former rival Dick Gephardt and his once loyal labor unions, further clearing the Massachusetts senator's path towards the nomination. His opponents, meanwhile, are seeking to slow his rapid rise and establish themselves as his alternative. Howard Dean is camping out in Wisconsin with hopes of resurrecting his struggling campaign, and Sons of the South John Edwards and Wesley Clark are stumping in that region as well. The upcoming campaign calendar likely will heap even more momentum and more delegates onto Kerry as well. His rivals haven't made much of an effort in Michigan, Washington, or Maine, where contests this weekend offered 228 delegates combined. The U.S. economy created just 112,000 new jobs in January, far fewer than expected, government data showed on Friday, in a disappointing report that will likely weigh on George W. Bush's election campaign. The fifth straight monthly gain in payrolls outside farming followed a revised increase of 16,000 new jobs in December, the Labor Department said. The unemployment rate ticked down to 5.6%, the lowest rate since January 2002, from 5.7% the previous month, but those numbers are taken from a separate, smaller survey. Analysts had been expecting the improving economy to create 150,000 new jobs in January. They were looking for the unemployment rate to hold steady at 5.7%. More news after this.
In an instant, my son could make anyone smile. In an instant, he was gone. The driver was looking for other cars. But he didn't watch out for my son. Crossing the street. Imagine, in the time it takes to stop for someone in the crosswalk, you could save a life. Or change yours forever.
A message from the Federal Highway Administration.
An Idaho truck driver received his Million Mile Safe Driving Award in a hospital after getting injured in a crash. Raymond Mattis was headed from Washington State to Ohio and planned to stop in Missoula, Montana on Saturday to pick up his award from Jim Palmer Trucking. Before he could reach the company's yard, an SUV skidded into the path of his tractor-trailer on Interstate 90 outside of town. For IE America Radio Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Hey, what is it?
I realize I love you, but as long as you're with Jessica, there can never be anything between us.
Cassie, there's no need to cry. Besides, I've got really great news.
You're leaving Jessica?
No. I just saved a load of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico. I saved. I thought that meant something to you.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Anyone who still thinks that there's not a dime's worth of difference between the two parties should take a look at a Washington squabble over the dime itself. A gaggle of top Republican leaders in Congress, including the odious legislative thug Tom DeLay, are furiously pushing a bill to alter the dime. They want to remove the likeness of Franklin D. Roosevelt from the coin and replace it with the countenance of Ronald Reagan. In a time when America's health care system is failing, when the federal budget is $500 billion short, when middle-class jobs are disappearing, when our troops are dying every day in Iraq and Afghanistan, isn't it comforting to see that our country's lawmakers do not let these actual problems deter them from getting down in the slime of petty partisanship for something as inconsequential as displacing a Democratic president with a Republican one on our 10-cent piece? Democrats in Congress are responding with their own effort to keep FDR on the coin. They point out that his face was put on it not merely because he was president, but especially because he had founded the March of Dimes organization, through which America's children collected the dimes that funded research into polio, the awful disease that had put Roosevelt himself in a wheelchair. Thanks to those dimes, a vaccine was developed that effectively ended polio in our country. But Democrats are not alone in opposing this effort to scrape FDR off the dime. None other than Nancy Reagan opposes it. Indeed, Ronald Reagan himself has proudly noted that he voted for Roosevelt in all four of his presidential elections, and Reagan cited the Democrat as the greatest president of the century. This is Jim Hightower saying, nonetheless, the rabidly partisan Republican leaders are still demanding FDR's head. If they win, will they then go after the nickel, which features Jefferson, the first Democrat? To help stop this silliness on the dime, call the office of Representative Jim McGovern, 202-225-6101.
The Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. Fred Rogers, a pleasure to have you here.
What I'm hearing you say is that you delight in creating community.
I do. I think thinking about things and working through problems and issues is an important tool.
I'm just thinking that the world could take some lessons from the Doug Steffen neighborhood.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
The hour. All right. Before we go back to your phone calls, I want to do this. We've got this audio thanks to our Broken Arrow, Oklahoma bureau chief. That would be Nelson. He provided some vintage sound, vintage audio of Bill Clinton at the 2000 Democratic National Convention that will either make you very sad or very angry or both, or you'll just yawn or you won't give a damn or whatever. I think Clinton was a good president. I don't think he was a good leader. I think he was a good president. He was a good CEO of America Incorporated for the 8 years that he was the CEO of America Incorporated. He's another one I do not believe in the least was a Democrat. I don't know what he was. He claimed Democratic Party membership, but you know, like a lot of these people do. But, you know, to me, it's not what you claim. Christ, I could claim to be a Buddhist monk. That doesn't make me a Buddhist monk. You know, you're known by your action. You're known by what you do. So Clinton demonstrated, I think, very clearly that he was not a Democrat. He was whatever he was. And that's cool. I happen to think he was an excellent CEO of America Incorporated for the 8 years he was there. And frankly, as far as president and CEO of America Incorporated, I would have liked to have seen the person who won the election, Al Gore, continue the Clinton tradition as CEO of America Incorporated. Does that mean that I think Bill Clinton or Al Gore were or would have been great presidents, great leaders, great Democrats? Absolutely no. Absolutely no. He was what he was. Okay? So here we go. I want you to listen to our the last elected president who held office in the United States as he describes first the mess he inherited from Bush the First, then how he and Gore turned America Incorporated around, and finally what could happen to America Incorporated if Bush the Second is elected instead of Gore.
8 years ago, when our party met in New York, it was in a far different time for America. Our economy was in trouble, our society was divided, our political system was paralyzed. 10 million of our fellow citizens were out of work, interest rates were high, the deficit was $290 billion and rising. After 12 years of Republican rule, the federal debt had quadrupled, imposing a crushing burden on our economy and on our children. Welfare rolls, crime, teen pregnancy, income inequality, all had been skyrocketing. And our government was part of the problem, not part of the solution.
Other than the interest rates are low right now, but they are artificially low. They have been hammered into the ground. Thanks to the Fed chairman, in order to try to pull Bush's ass out of the embers. What's the overnight rate down to now? 1%, for God's sake? 10 million of our fellow citizens were out of work 12 years ago. How many are out of work today? Our economy was in trouble, Clinton said. Where's our economy today? Our society was divided. Oh, Bill, you ain't seen nothing. Until you see what's out there today. The deficit was $290 billion. Don't you wish it were that low now? And then Clinton says government was part of the problem, not part of the solution. Some of this stuff is almost, I mean, it's beyond ironic. Here he is again on how he and Gore, as the two chief executives of America Incorporated, cleaned up the Reagan-Bush 12-year mess and turned things around in America Incorporated and prevented the Republicans from ruining the environment, cutting the education budget, and raiding Medicare. That is, until the Supreme Court appointed Bush.
Today, after 7.5 years of hard effort, we're in the midst of the longest economic expansion in history. More than 22 million new jobs, the lowest unemployment in 30 years, the lowest female unemployment in 40 years, the lowest Hispanic and African-American unemployment rate ever recorded, and the highest home ownership in history. Along the way, in 1995, we turned back the largest cuts in history in Medicare, Medicaid, education, and the environment. And just 2 years later, we proved that we could find a way to balance the budget and protect our values. Today, we have gone from the largest deficits in history to the largest surpluses in history.
Can you believe? Can you believe what Bush has done to America Incorporated in less than 4 years? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Compare and contrast now Bush's phony leave no child behind empty rhetoric, since he keeps cutting funding for education, to Clinton and Gore's very real accomplishments for our children in America Incorporated during their 8 years.
Turning our schools around with higher standards, more accountability, more investment. We have doubled funding for Head Start and provided after-school and mentoring to more than 1 million more young people. We're putting 100,000 well-trained teachers in the early grades to lower class size. 95% of our schools are already connected to the Internet. Reading, math, and SAT scores are up, and more students than ever are going on to college thanks to the biggest expansion of college aid since the GI Bill 50 years ago.
And what has Bush done to that? Gutted Head Start, gutted after school and mentoring programs, gutted adding 100,000 well-trained teachers in order to lower class size, destroyed the Pell Grants, made it damn near impossible for middle-income people who don't qualify for student loans because their income is just over the line, to make it impossible for people like that to send their kids to college. This is what George Bush has done. George Bush has trashed and destroyed this country. He has trashed it. He has destroyed it. Are these impeachable offenses? No. So are you pissed off yet? Well, keep listening. Think about how Bush has lied to our seniors and has put Medicare and Social Security at risk as you listen to this clip.
We've extended the life of the Medicare Trust Fund by 26 years, added coverage for cancer screening and cutting-edge clinical trials. We're coming closer to cures for dreaded diseases. We made sure that people with disabilities could go to work without losing their health care, and that people could switch jobs without losing their coverage. You can be proud of that Democratic record.
Cancer screening, coverage for cancer screening through Medicare, gone. Clinical trials, gone. Funding for the clinical trials, gone. Research on what Clinton calls dreaded diseases, gone. Here Clinton talks about the Republicans and the importance of this election. He truly becomes psychic here as he predicts what will happen if they, these Republicans, win or steal the election. Remember, when he refers to they, he's talking about the Republicans.
They say we have a big projected 10-year surplus, and they want to spend every dime of it and then some on tax cuts right now. That would leave nothing for education or Medicare, prescription drugs, nothing to extend the life of Medicare and Social Security for the baby boomers, nothing in case the projected surpluses don't come in. Now think about your own family's budget for a minute, or your own business budget. Would you sign a binding contract today to spend all your projected income for a decade, leaving nothing for your family's basic needs?
What they're saying there is no. But, of course, that's what the Bush bastard has done. Finally, think about the elections coming up this November 2nd when you hear this last clip.
I ask you, let's remember the standard our Republican friends used to have for whether a party should continue in office. My fellow Americans, are we better off today than we were 8 years ago?
Now, what do you think your answer to that last question would be? 4 years from now, if we return the Bush bastard to office in November and his crew of thieves, charlatans, brigands, and thugs. Huh? Like I say, you know, say what you want about Bill Clinton. He was good. He was bad. He was a Democrat. He was a Republican. He was a Republican light. He couldn't keep his pants zipped. He was a liar, cheat, sneak. Frankly, none of that matters. The only thing that matters is how Bill Clinton, as CEO of America Incorporated, performed. And based on that, the old boy performed pretty damn good, didn't he? Was he a liberal? Hell no. Was he a Democrat? Hell no. Was he a good CEO for America Incorporated? Hell yes. And so, too, would have been Al Gore. Now, if you're a political purist and you don't want a Republican light in office and you hated Bill Clinton, even though he raised just every standard you could think of in corporate America, in America Incorporated, there's a difference between corporate America and America Incorporated. You and I live in America Incorporated. Corporate America has taken over. You understand what I'm saying with that? I hope so. Every single standard of a successful enterprise was included in the 8 years of Bill Clinton's CEO-ship of this country. And the things that were destructive, teen pregnancies, the murder rate, the crime rate, the divorces, everything that was destructive to a society went down. Until the Bush bastard and his collection, his posse of thugs, killers, and liars took over.
And prosperity might finally come. Deficits were gone, just opportunity knocking. The new millennium. And then a flawed election got us started.
Welcome and good evening. Soon, one of these lucky ladies will be crowned Miss Kumquat of Monroe County. The envelope, please. Miss Debbie Andrews. I have good news.
I can't believe I won.
You didn't.
Huh?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
We are going to do Rumsfeld now. You know, I talk about doing acid 30 years ago. Rumsfeld must do it daily. Right before he goes out for a press conference, Rummy comes out all acid-headed up and, you know, just stoned on his ass, just completely freaked out.
Oh, hi. I noticed the doorknobs are all crawling around the ceiling. Hello. Ask me nothing. Get these spiders off of me. People are waving things at me. There's stuff jumping out of doors. Ew, Jesus. You know, the fire hose on the wall there, it just rose up like a snake. And you're asking me questions like, I don't know this stuff.
This is the Secretary of Defense, Truth Seeker. It's insane. Do you understand? These people are crazy.
So crazy someplace else. We're all stocked up here.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, Don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
Ready for a liberal helping of the truth? Here's Mike.
24 past the hour. I got an email here from Daryl in Montgomery, Alabama. Mike, I like Kucinich, but I have a problem with him making an agreement with Edwards in Iowa to have caucus goers side with each other's campaign if neither reached 15%. It was a great deal for Edwards, but I've heard that a number of Kucinich supporters were ticked off by this move since Edwards voted for the war and the Patriot Act. A number of Kucinich supporters in Iowa were ticked off. Would it not have been better, Daryl writes, to have stayed true to his supporters or thrown his support to Dean, who is at least somewhat closer to his positions than Edwards? Haven't heard your comments on this. What are your thoughts? Well, Daryl, I don't know that Dean's position on the war is closer to Kucinich than Edwards. As a matter of fact, I think everybody except Kucinich has said we can't pull out of Iraq. Or they haven't said they have a plan to disengage us, whereas Kucinich has. Kucinich says, no, we've got to get out of there. So I don't know that I agree with your characterization here that Kucinich is closer to Dean than he is to Edwards. Now, as far as Edwards and Kucinich working a deal for support, yeah, that was, you know, I don't know what that was about. I have no idea. I'm not trying to justify it, or I'm not trying to knock it down. I don't know. I don't know what the tactical idea behind that was. I have no idea. But I agree with you. It was, when I heard that, I thought, well, what's up with that? But I don't know. I wish I'd give you a better answer, pal, but I can't. Alvin is calling from Augusta. Hey, Alvin.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, Alvin.
Hey, Mike, you know you're my guy. I love you, guy,
but
tell me, would it hurt you to say that Sharpton is a true Democrat?
No, I've said it many times before.
Kucinich is not the only one that's calling for pulling the troops out.
All right.
Sharpton is calling for pulling the troops out.
Well, yeah.
Right away.
But I've got, you know, I've been honest about this issue. I've told anyone who's tuned in, I've got some problems, Mr. Sharpton. His whole campaign is being run by Republicans. Read the article at villagevoice.com. It just came out. Al Sharpton is chock-a-block with Republicans. Now, I don't know what's up with that. I also don't think that Al Sharpton is leaving a trail of unpaid bills behind him. Whatever campaign funds he's put together, he's misused. And I'm still having a problem getting past the Tawana Brawley thing. I know it's 20 years ago.
I've heard you criticize that. I never knew. What evidence did you have that he didn't leave Tawana Brawley? Tawana Brawley was a lady who,
yeah, I know,
a
I know,
young
I
girl
know.
At that time who claimed she was raped by a group of white men, and
right, and it was all proven wrong. And Tawana Brawley eventually said, "I made the whole thing up." And even at that point, Sharpton was not willing to let go of it.
Now, the last time I saw this thing was some 2 years after the whole thing was decided. She was still saying that it was true.
No, do a Google search. Just type in Tawana Brawley. You'll get more information than you could possibly read in one night. Tawana Brawley fessed up that the whole thing was a con job. I forget specifically what she said the reason for doing it was. And as a result of that,
let me ask you this. Did she say he was a part of the con?
I don't remember if she said that, but the people that had been accused by Al Sharpton asked for one thing from him, an apology, and he refused to give it. Now, to me, I've got problems with that, and I don't care if a man's black or white or Republican or Democrat. You know, when somebody gets involved in a scam like that, and then the top blows off of it, and everybody sees what's really happening. And the alleged victim even says, no, it never happened. I'm sorry, it never happened. And that person or person, those people don't have the decency to apologize for all the crap they put the country through. You know, that was a time when the race thing, not that it still isn't, but the race thing was just explosive in this country. And there was Al Sharpton doing what he was doing. So, you know, Al Sharpton, maybe the other thing I have against
now,
Al
Sharpton. Now, Sharpton was one of the people, there are a lot of people.
Hold on a second, Alvin. Let me put you on hold. I'll come back. We gotta do a break here. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. Stand up for what you believe in. Stand up. Speak up. Tell somebody nothing. Speak up. Shake up. Shake up the status quo. Shake up. Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
You're listening to The Mike Molloy Show, 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, Monday through Friday on IE America Radio Network.
In the world of statistics, the human impact on the natural environment is enormous and abnormal. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. When it comes to consumption of the Earth's natural resources, the impact of humanity is far outside the range of what's normal for populations of many other warm-blooded creatures. That's one finding in a study by Chuck Fowler, an ecologist with the National Marine Mammal Laboratory in Seattle, Washington. Fowler normally studies the way entire populations of marine mammals affect their surroundings. He expanded his research to see how people compare with other species in terms of the ecological footprint we leave on the natural world.
There are lots of ways of measuring those footprints, and they range all the way from our consumption of food resources, our production of carbon dioxide, our occupation of space. You name it, there are just lots of ways of measuring the footprint, and what we are doing now is using the footprints that all species have and making comparisons between humans and other species in a way where we're getting an assessment of what works.
In part of his study, Fowler compared the size of the human population to numbers for 63 other mammals that are roughly our size and weight. The list included animals such as seals and white-tailed deer. The statistical comparison produced a range of population sizes that would be considered normal for each species. The upper limit of normal population sizes were in the tens of millions, but no higher. Fowler says a world filled with a billion white-tailed deer would be quite abnormal. In the context of this study, he says abnormal clearly applies to the human population, which now stands at 6 billion people. Fowler's research was recently published in a journal of the Royal Society of London. The article carries the title, Is Humanity Sustainable? Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. Some of our weaker citizens suffer an addiction to talk radio that causes them to listen to that Mike Molloy person each night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. We suggest you satisfy your Jones by listening to some of our morally upstanding, honest, and ethical talk show hosts like Dr. Laura, G. Gordon Liddy, Oliver North, and Rush Limbaugh. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Molloy Show, just say no.
I have this representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector!
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You're now entering a flying monkey-free zone. Here's Mike Molloy.
27 before the hour. We're talking with Alvin in Augusta. All right, let's wrap this up on Reverend Al here, Alvin.
Okay.
Or the Tawana Brawley thing.
I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll go check out some of these sources you're talking about.
Yeah, just do a Google on Tawana Brawley. Not Al Sharpton. Do it on Tawana Brawley and see what you come up with. But, okay. I'm not saying that Al Sharpton is not a true Democrat. There are two Democrats in the race, Al Sharpton and Dennis Kucinich. But Al Sharpton has sold his soul to Satan, and the Satan that he sold to are the Republican operatives. Every single person who has engineered and financed his campaign are Republicans. You got to check this out, Alvin. Go to Village Voice.
I will check that out.
VillageVoice.com. The article just came out this week, and it's a shocker, man.
Well, Mike, I always vote Democrat, and I know you're a Democrat.
That's right.
And That's I didn't know what you just told me, but let's look at this. When all those votes were stolen down in Florida,
mm-hmm.
and the blacks, we've been more loyal to the Democratic Party than any other group of people have.
As a group, you're absolutely right.
And it only took one white Democratic senator to go along with the NAACP and the other people who were investigating that needed someone to call for a special investigation down there to put a halt to that.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't get one.
I know.
So whenever it comes to blacks advancing to the highest rungs of political power,
mm-hmm.
they have to go out and find a communist or find a Libyan or a...
Not really. Come on, man. Come on, Alvin. My problem with Al is how, Jesse Jackson did not let Republicans run his campaign. Since we're talking race, his presidential campaign. And Jesse Jackson, how many primaries did he win? Six, seven, eight?
Well, he did turn against Louis Farrakhan when it was...
And he should have. Louis Farrakhan is a hustler.
Look. No, Mike.
Alvin, you and I could go on about this. I lived in Chicago for almost 4 years. I'm not saying I know Farrakhan better than anybody. Some of his message is fine, but I cannot tolerate people, whether they're black, white, Jew or Gentile, American or Israeli, gay or straight. Who takes Christian, I don't care who, what they are, people who spend an inordinate amount of their time dumping on somebody else the way, since we're talking about it, Minister Farrakhan dumps on the Jews and dumps on...
Wait a minute, Mike. I've gone to most of his Savior's Day
okay.
celebrations. He doesn't dump on all Jews. Jews on the stage with him, Mike.
I know, and I'm sure Adolf Hitler had Jews in his administration too.
Mike, he doesn't dump on all Jews.
I know.
He dumps on the Jews that deserve being dumped. I've heard you dump on what's his name that's running for that dropped out.
You will hear me dump on individuals. I will go after individuals, but I defy you to tell me a time on this program when I've said they, referring to a group. Huh?
When he said
With one exception.
Okay.
Republicans.
Well,
and that's because I hate them.
I do too, Mike.
All right. Listen, man, I got to move on.
One statement, though, Mike.
Go ahead.
When he jumps on people... Of the Jews you're talking about?
Yeah.
You better believe they've already dumped on him. He's dumping back.
All right. Thanks, Alvin. Appreciate your call. What? Gaddy's looking at me like what? But my feelings about Louis Farrakhan, about anybody who I don't want to get into it. I don't want to get into it. Alvin, I love you like a brother. Joe is... What?
I just wanted to say that Farrakhan is just trying to save the world from bad food.
Joe is calling from Brookings, Oregon, our bureau chief there. Hey, Joe. Oh, wait a minute. There's Joe. Hey, Joe.
Okay. Yeah, well, I'm calling up to talk about how gullible a lot of Democratic voters are, and they let the media and some of these loudmouths on TV to tell them how to think and how to vote. And I was reading a USA Today about this a woman going to Iowa caucus, a couple weeks ago, and she was and she said she was a Nader voter in 2000. She regretted it. Blah blah blah. And this time around, that the this same woman says, "Well, Dennis Kucinich is my favorite candidate, but I'm going to go vote for John Edwards instead because I don't want the Democratic Party to move too far to the left." I mean, this is how a lot of Democrats think, because they let these loudmouth jerks like Chris Matthews and the rest of these idiots tell them, well, you know, you can only win with a moderate. You know, I seem to remember like a couple of months ago. Do you remember this, Mike, when Al Gore came out and endorsed a candidate named Howard Dean, and everyone was saying that the race was over and Howard Dean had it clinched?
Right, right.
You remember that?
Sure.
Now, this is the point. The same media that helped build up Howard Dean took down Howard Dean.
That's true.
This is the same media that is building up John Kerry. Well, guess what? They can take down John Kerry just as easily. And the fact is, we're going to reach out to the center, and we're going to reach out to all these.
Well, now wait a second. I would disagree with that. I do not think it would be just as easy for media to take down John Kerry as it was for Howard Dean. John Kerry is an establishment figure. Howard Dean wasn't. By establishment figure, that means John Kerry. Not only has he been a senator forever. But he's in that upper 1, 2, 3, 5% of wealth holders in this country. He travels in certain circles that Howard Dean would never travel in. Howard Dean may be a doctor, but he's in the working class. He's in the middle class. John Kerry is not in the middle class. Those are just A, B, C, and D. Another reason they won't be able to take Kerry down as easily, I'm not saying they can't take him down, but not as easily. Kerry is a decorated military veteran, and this country is very weird about veterans, decorated veterans, especially.
Well, that meant a lot for Max Cleland when he ran.
No, I'm talking about the editorial writers.
Yeah.
You said the media could take him down.
Yeah.
Well, the media supported Max Cleland. So it wasn't the media that took Max Cleland down. What took Max Cleland down was a bunch of dumbass, half-witted, peanut-eating, hair-twisting, thumb-sucking conservatives in the state of Georgia and a lying, illegal a computer program that stole the election, not just from Governor Roy Barnes, but also from Max Cleland. That wasn't media that took him down. We're talking about what you brought up, Joe, media taking somebody down. Media will not be able to take John Kerry down as easily as they have caused the confusion and caused the nonsense about Howard Dean. Can't do it, because John Kerry is part of this country's establishment. Like it or not, he is.
Well, yeah.
Howard Dean is not.
Yeah, well, I realize that.
Okay, well, and that's the difference.
Well, one thing that to tear down John Kerry, you don't even have to lie. Go into the guy's real record. Look at what a flip flopper this guy is, and they can just take a little thing.
But
and
they
just
won't. But they
run
won't,
it into the ground.
But they won't do that. That's my point. They're not going to do that to Kerry. They'll do it to Howard Dean. They'll do it to Al Gore. But they're not going to do it to Kerry. Al Gore was not part of the establishment in this country. John Kerry is. Al Gore was nothing more, nothing less. He was not a wealthy man. He comes from Tennessee. He was a son of a senator, but he just married some to Tipper Gore. John Kerry is part of the establishment in this country. It's people like John Kerry that hangs out with the editorial writers and the newspaper owners and the television moguls. They are not going to take him down. Trust me on that, Joe. Trust me. Let's just watch and see what happens. If he gets the nomination.
Okay, well, we'll make a bet on that.
As a matter of fact, what the media will do, if he gets the nomination, they will support John Kerry, and they will carve George W. Bush a new ass Trust me on that, because media have decided they don't like George Bush.
Well, wait. What if Bush and these guys get their heads out of their butts and they put in a
Won't
guy
happen.
Like Colin Powell
Won't happen.
Or Rudy Giuliani at
Won't
the
happen.
Bottom of the ticket?
Won't happen.
I'm saying these guys, I don't care.
You know why they won't put Rudy Giuliani in? Because he's an adulterer. He's a wife abuser. He left his wife and moved in with his whore. And the base of the Republican Party will not tolerate that. Any of this nonsense you've heard about Giuliani joining the Republican ticket in place of Dick Cheney, file it under N for nonsense. It's not going to happen.
Okay, that's another bet.
Okay, listen, I got to move on. Thanks, Joe. Joe disconnects like, damn! No, Rudy Giuliani is no more going to be the vice presidential candidate than I am on the Republican ticket. He's a punk. He's a player. You know, he likes to get some outside his marriage. And he's like Gary Hart. He's not Bill Clinton. He's like Gary Hart. He challenges the press to question him on his extramarital sexual affairs. He challenges them. He sticks his finger in the press's eye. Giuliani was an absolute, utter failure who was on the brink of being impeached, for God's sake, from the mayor's office when 911 occurred. No, forget Giuliani. Forget him completely, okay? Colin Powell? No. Luke is calling from Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Luke.
Hey, Mike. Hey, first of all, let me thank you for running those clips with Clinton. It makes you realize how far we've
come. Oh, my God. You know, those clips sound like something you hear on the History Channel from the 40s.
Well, you know, you, when I was sitting there, I'm sitting there going, you know, maybe with the exception of Robert Byrd, he's probably the best speaker we've had in the last 30, 40 years.
Oh, Clinton's great. Clinton's great. I could listen to Clinton all the time, even though, you know, he might be trying to, tell me something I don't want to hear.
Oh, yeah.
He's got a way of doing it. I could listen to Clinton forever.
Well, him and also Gore, too. They were the kinds, they had just enough of this preacher in them, the southern preacher.
Yeah.
That is almost like going to revival, you know what I mean? Where it's one of those things, they could catch you and hang on to you. The same thing with Byrd, you know what I mean? He's one of those people, even if you didn't understand the Greek, you wanted to listen to him.
Yeah, right,
but,
exactly.
Like I say, Sunday we're going to listen to the squatters in the White House who can't put three words together without making a mistake. Is that going to be a real softball game, you figure?
Oh, that's going to be, I can't say it on family radio what it's going to be. But
I mean, I'm figuring a good softball game.
Yeah, well, you know, Tim Russert is media whore number one. He's not called that on this program and Bart Kopp and media whores online because he's an unbiased, astute journalist. You know, he is what he is.
Oh, yeah.
He sucks up to power. Not only does he suck up to power, but he was another one that was just terrified of Clinton's penis. He was fixated on Clinton's penis. He was fixated on what was going on between Monica Lewinsky and Bill Clinton. And, you know, this guy is a real scum sucker.
I'm going to Bart Cop and seeing that graphic.
Right.
That animated. Oh.
I know. Don't say it.
But it's funny. When you see it, you go, yeah, that's him.
That's him, all right.
Okay. What I've called to talk about, I'm sorry. Was one of the stories I think is being totally overlooked is this thing with this guy named Manuel Miranda.
Oh, Bill Frist.
Bill Frist, apparently a lawyer or something.
Yeah, he's
a sapper.
Yeah, he's been sent home now.
Oh, did you understand the other thing though about it? I read in the story, the UPI story. He came to Bill Frist's office. He was actually working out of Orrin Hatch's office.
Right, exactly.
Now you know there's the investigation going on. Do you know who the investigation his report goes to?
Bill Frist.
Orrin Hatch.
Orrin Hatch. These scummy bastards. Have I mentioned tonight how much I hate these people?
If you haven't, I will.
they're just vile. They're just like slugs that you know or crawly things. You turn up a rock and they just skitter into the darkness. They are so bad. And this phony religious punk Orrin Hatch, you know, he claims his specialness because he's a Mormon. And Frist claims his specialness because what is he, Southern Baptist or Methodist? or something. These people are just disgusting. I mean, they really are. I understand. I read this article today about this, what you're talking about. I understand that the hardcore right-wing Republicans are very pissed off at Orrin Hatch because Hatch apparently allowed this thing to expand into a wider investigation. This is so Republican. This is so Republican. They don't want the truth. They don't want decency, honor, and justice. They just want their scummy form of U.S. politics, and they'll have it. By God, some way they'll have it.
Hey, Mike, something else I noticed. And listening to this Rison story all week.
Yeah.
Now, tell me if I'm wrong. Don't they still search the mail? I mean, they still do it at our company, and it's been two
years.
Well,
this didn't come in the mail, apparently.
That's what I mean, though. I haven't heard anybody say that it didn't come in the mail.
Well,
what
I heard was it was a packet of ricin was found in the cloakroom in Frist's office or the Senate office building.
But if you listen to the national news, they're talking like it came in the mail.
I know.
What they're making it sound like.
I know.
Somebody had to walk in with a packet.
Right.
And saying, you know, and the thing about it is they're acting like, well, it's like anthrax. No, you have to eat this stuff.
I think,
it ain't just touching it, breathing it.
Yeah, I think it was somebody in Frist's office or Frist himself. This was to divert attention away from the investigation and to keep people out of Frist's office. And by God, it worked. That's what Republicans do. They are liars, punks, thieves, thugs, killers, and not to mention just generally all around bad people.
I tell you.
Thanks, Luke.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, appreciate it. Now, I said, Kathy's looking at me funny, I said, I do not condemn groups of people except Republicans. I make an exception for them because they are so rotten.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
If you think people are more important than corporations, you need to see The Progressive Populist. Twice a month, we feature columnists such as Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and other plutocrat pluckers from around the country. We'll send you a free sample copy if you'll call us toll-free 1-800-205-7067 or see our website at populist.com. That's 1-800-205-7067 or populist.com for The Progressive Populist, the newspaper for Main Street USA.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and four pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped five sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now, 1-800-865-8449.
Thieves in High Places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Hey, Jim, how you doing?
I'm tired of this crappy job.
What? I thought you loved this job. You have a company car. You even have a expense account. What's the problem?
But I have to listen to all this junk radio, and I miss all my favorite political talk shows like Tom Hartman and Peter B. Collins because I have to be the stupid job.
Why don't you listen to them on your computer like me?
Because for some stupid reason, I have to pay attention to what's going on at work or something like that. I don't remember. I wasn't listening. All I know is that I'm pretty cranky when I miss my shows.
You think?
I should just go over there and tell him that I'm not coming to work until I listen to my shows, and if he's got a problem with it, then we can go outside, punk.
Hold on there. Just listen to the best in political talk on Sundays.
The what?
The best in political talk on Sundays from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time. You can hear the best of Tom Hartman and Peter B. Collins.
Really? Well, that's better than picking a fight with the boss.
Yeah, you'll keep your job and your health.
What? You don't think I can take him?
He's big, dude.
I would waste him.
Yeah, right.
That's the best of political talk Sunday nights from 10 to midnight Eastern Time on the IE America Radio Network.
This is Mike Malloy with the IE America Radio Network. Want to know more about our talk shows and personalities but don't know where to look? Do you want to find out what guests are scheduled or what topics we'll be discussing on our programs? Would you like to participate in live chat or vote in interactive polls? All this and more is available at the IE America Radio website. Bookmark it. Stop surfing and get active. Visit www.ieamericaradio.com today.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
No subliminal messages for you to misunderestimate. It's Mike Malloy. He's commonsensical.
Five before the hour. Boy, I just get a feeling. I don't know why, Kat. I get a feeling I just pissed everybody off. You know, Alvin over there in Augusta and some of our emailers. And I told you this night started wrong when whatever screwed up with the internet feed screwed up. But I just got everybody pissed off. Well, that's all right. We only have 15 more broadcast days.
You'll miss me when I'm gone, I'll tell you.
Rick is calling from Seattle. Hey, Rick.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
Doing fine, sir. How are you?
Well, fine, fine. You haven't offended me at all.
Oh, well, good. That's I'm good. That, there's one.
Anyway, I was just looking at the computer at MSNBC's homepage.
Mm-hmm.
And they were touting this, one of the top news stories was the number of jobs that were added during the month of January,
mm-hmm.
which is about 112,000.
Until they revised it down, which I always do. But, yeah, I saw that tonight.
But,
right.
But right now they're saying 112,000, and on the surface, well, that looks like that's better than 1,000 or zero.
Sure.
And but I looked a little, you know, I'm searching a little farther, and I find an article back in a dark cave there on MSNBC that says job cuts top 117,000 in January.
Well, guess what then? Let's see. If I can still do third grade subtraction, that means we come up with a net loss of 5,000 jobs.
Right, exactly. But on the article that you find immediately when you look at the webpage,
right,
has a smiling face of Elaine Chao on it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Says firms added 112,000 jobs in January.
And that is, I mean, doesn't that? Oh, yeah. It makes you as pissed off as it does me, I'm sure.
And then, in addition to that, of course, we need a minimum of approximately 150,000 jobs every month of just new people coming into the job force.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. That's
so anyway.
Yeah, yeah, it's weird. And manufacturing jobs, I understand, went down for the 42nd straight month. That's not good either, is it?
No, the country's been gutted. As I see it, there's no way that we can have any sort of recovery.
I don't know what the hell.
All the substances have been gutted.
Yeah, I don't know what we're going to do. Get rid of NAFTA, get rid of all this stuff. Hey, Rick, there's some music. We're out of time, pal.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for checking in. I appreciate your call, sir. But I just want to go home. Program produced here in Atlanta by Catherine Bay. Robin Bittman announces for us. Program engineered in Detroit by our good friend John Lucas. Thank you, John. Mark Marshall is the webmaster at MikeMalloy.com. Check it out. Chris in Minnesota is our senior correspondent. Jim in Arkansas, our music bureau chief. I'll see you Monday, I hope. I really, really hope. Take care. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.
You're listening to Mike Malloy on the IE America Radio Network. Copyright 2004.
Another audio clip from the production meeting. Doug Steffen.
What production meeting?
The drive. You know how many radio stations we're on? We must be doing something right, guys.
Yeah. Imagine if we really tried.
Doug. Yeah, yeah.
If we don't care, and it shows.
On the IE America Radio Network. My fellow Americans.